correction. The word "not" in the first line is actually blue.
Is it? Oh, well, Ma, as I say, Ma, as I was really getting bad. It all looked very black to me. My apologies. Yes, it is blue. Sorry about that. I see. That's the typo that has been referred to. Can we bring that back at 2:30, please? I think you were saying 2:30 to me. But just a minute before I absolutely adjourn, I'm just a bit concerned because the other day, the motions came off. Yesterday, was it, or something? We had the motions last. Oh, so that normally they are first, are they not? Yes, okay. So, I think if we can meet at 2:30, is that all right? Well, we actually don't have to. We are excused from the house as a committee. Okay, so that's already been processed. But I'm saying, we will adjourn until 2:30. I see it's 1:30. What time does the house meet? It's 2:00 today. 2:00. Yes.
It's 2:00 today.
Today it's 2:00. You know, a lot of things are changing, a variation on a theme. Thanks. Just for the record then, starting now at about 2:50, is it? And we need to go back in the bill, and those few areas that were parked, can we address them first, please? There was another area, I think, outstanding from DTI, the request of a list, was it, Honourable Van der Merwe, that they were going to supply us with some number of patents, or what was it? There were two things. I'm just saying what's outstanding.
There was the sustainability of the trust issue, which I think the DTI should address us on. They have given us more than one document on that matter. And then the other point was really a query from Mr. Harris regarding patents and how many patents had been registered from an indigenous stock. So there's also a document on that, but maybe the DTI can speak to us on that as well.
First, address those issues from DTI. I'm sure by now you have the material available. Thanks. Ms. Ntuli?
Chair, I would request that we just wait for Mr. Nat to come in. Okay. All right. All right, then we will address those issues now.
Tenzi?
No, thanks, Chair and Honourable Members. The document I'm talking to is from CIPIC. It has been distributed to members. This is in response to the question which was asked to say how many patents have been registered in the area of biodiversity or genetic resources. And then the author of that document started by giving a sort of a background and then said the following. There are three patents that have been registered that have got a genetic resource component. And then she described the issue of an international registration in inverted comma, international registration of patents. It is called Patent Cooperation Treaty, PCT. Registration, by way of background, of patents or intellectual property. It is territorial in nature. In other words, if you want to register a patent, you have to go country by country. You go to South Africa, you go to Zimbabwe, you go to Britain or France, because they've got their own rules. But procedurally, they are trying to harmonize. They're trying to harmonize the process. But substantively, there is no patent that is called international. A good example is that France has got a public morale, public morals, in so much that if a patent maybe encourages, pornography, as an example, France may say, no, we are granting this patent. South Africa may say, no, we are not. So it depends on the laws of that country. So intellectual property registration is territorial in nature. That's what we mean. However, South Africa has joined an international treaty that deals with registration of international registration. So what that document is saying is that even if the Patents Amendment Act of 2006 became enforceable in 2007, because of this international registration, what happens is that you go to WIPO in the central depository. Thereafter, WIPO will do a preliminary search in various countries on your behalf and tell you to say, we think there is nothing like your patents in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, and in Britain and the US, as an example. So here's a report, make a business decision. Do you want a protection in all those countries that we advise that there is nothing similar like yours? Or there is a Panado there, and then you are coming with this thing, and in South Africa, because of Panado, that achieves the same thing, you may find that you don't have a big market because people still rely on Panado even if it has expired. So you have to take a decision. So because of that process, you find that you are given, say, 36 months, and you may apply for an extension before it comes into South Africa as an application. Before it goes into Zimbabwe, because you are given a long time to make your decision. So therefore, the author of that letter is saying, we only have 3 registrations in South Africa, but we cannot conclude precisely that there are no other patents that may be coming to South Africa as a destination of registration. We will only talk about these 3 that came into South Africa, and then in short, we found that they have disclosed the genetic resources, and therefore we followed the procedure of the Act and the regulations to go to the Environmental Affairs to say, these people are declaring or disclosing, can we follow the process of working with the communities, the permit and everything. So therefore there is no effective patent since that has been registered in South Africa ever since the Act has been passed. So if I may conclude, there is this one, the Nestle story, which we have been talking about, the Makasa or Alice and Nestle story. According to the oral discussion with the Registrar of Patents is that it has not yet come into South Africa. However, at WIPO, they can easily see that this person is using the genetic resource of South Africa, but it is not revealed. That's how they caught the Nestle issue. So the Nestle issue was caught outside the country, but maybe its patent is still coming to South Africa, so it has not yet reached. But the genetic resource was caught internationally. So we cannot say whether the benefits accruing from that act has been realized as for now. That we cannot say. But if one jumps a gun, I'm just jumping a gun, to say the Makasa community, even if the patent has not yet arrived, they have concluded something of a benefit sharing per year or for whatever, that conclusion can be reached, but not based on the registered patent and the genetic resource disclosure. So I'm trying to answer that question of how many patents. I don't know what was the relevance of the question, but I'm giving raw information here. Yes. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that. I wasn't here when that question was raised by Honourable Harris, so I look at Honourable van der Merwe, it certainly seems as if it's been responded to. I mean, you see, the thing, Honourable Smuller, you know, we've got the response now. We can't go backwards just because people aren't here now. So we have to just communicate that then. Okay. So we've done that particular one. And then we come to the... Are you completed, Mr. Niasi Tenzi?
Yes, I'm complete on the issue of genetic resource disclosure. But there is the other issue of the National Trust. Yes.
That one. And now, I think it was only the two issues, the National Trust.
No, thanks, Jen. There is a document that was distributed there. And then in short is that we are talking about the National Trust that will be the custodian of the intellectual property, indigenous work of those often or unknown communities or non-existent communities. So that National Trust is well described in the Act, in the bill, and then we are in agreement with that. But when we got this in writing, somewhere there's something which we want to clear. In short, is that the question was to say, will it be sustainable when this Act is in operation? And then our argument is based on issues of saying the National Trust will be the custodian and then will manage this intellectual property, and then should it be funded? Before I come to that, how will it be funded? And then we said in the NEDLAC report and all over we have been saying it will function like a collecting society in reality. And then collecting societies all over the world, they are self-sustainable. There is an agreement in the area of collecting societies that can't you take, retain something of what you have collected? If you collect, say, 100 million or say 100 rand, internationally, they are allowed to retain a certain percentage. Generally, internationally, it's 20%. 20% of what they have collected. In the area of copyright, what we call Nigel time, in 2002, we followed that international model of saying 20% can be good for a collecting society to sustain itself. And then, so it is in our statutory books only for the purposes of needle time. Then, by extension, we say, since this trust is functioning like a collecting society, it will be better to follow the model of collecting societies in South Africa that are in existence in relation to Negle time. And then we propose the 20% until such time that there is a review of copyright legislation. And then again we indicated that there are three collecting societies, that is one for the recording companies, and then another one for generally for artists, musicians, and the like. It's called SAMRO, and then the other one is called NOM. So the fourth one is liquidated, but not because it was not sustainable, because there was mismanagement. So it has to be liquidated, but the 20% is enough. So we also, by analogy, said within the DTI, the Lotteries Act establishes, say, the board, the Lotteries Board. And then the Lotteries Board, again, is a manager, it's a manager or trustee of the national, the National Lottery Distribution Fund, a trust fund, NLDTF. So the board manages that as a trustee, in so much that whenever money from Lotto comes in, they retain 34% for distribution to needy areas. And then there is also a 5% that's for miscellaneous, but all in all, what we are saying is that they retain money for the purposes of this fund to be operational. And so much that, therefore, we are saying the DTI itself has got legislation, say, in the area of collecting societies and the trust, as we described it, and then these are functioning well, in so much that, therefore, even in this area of traditional knowledge, we can allow the National Trust to take the 20%, but as a startup, we can allow Parliament to appropriate money for a startup, and then it kickstarts itself. And then in conclusion, we said this issue of appropriating money following parliamentary process, it was the intention in relation to CIPCO. But CIPCO, you find that automatically at the port of entry was having a lot of reserves and the like. So all in all, whatever we are saying is that, in short, we said maybe the National Council may be the trustee of this National Trust, and then we are in agreement to say no, we don't need a conflict. We don't need a conflict because members of the National Council may be conflicted. So please, when you read that, what is in that paper, it is not a contradiction within the department. We are saying, let's take that issue of contradiction, conflict of interest, and we put it outside, and then we say we have proven that this National Trust can sustain itself without being a liability to the state. So I don't know whether the DDG wants to add something.
I think that was the input then from DTI. Yes, I'm Lord Smaller.
Chair, I think I just would like to understand something about the collecting societies, which has got a cap of 20% and 80%, and then the board, actually with the National Lottery Board, for instance, today on the other side, keeps 34%. You understand? I don't understand where the discretion actually comes into place, where the board actually has got a different cap than what we are withholding. I do understand that there was agreement, and I don't want to go into the context, but I wanted to understand the discretion between the two, that we don't find ourselves having a discretion in what our board might be having, or the new board that might be developed, and which will hold certain money. So I just would like to understand the possibilities of that. And my concern is that we've got a 12-month period for this all to kick in, or for business to come on board. Although the DTI did confirm that they are putting a startup capital, I just would like to understand from DTI, is your startup capital a sliding scale type of input capital, making provision for a 3 or a 2 in a 1 year, sliding scale, allowing for this thing to come up to base, that you don't find yourself that you're expecting it to come, and that we'll be able to fund, and that you don't find yourself in a position in 14 months' time, 16 months' time, down the line, that there are shortcomings, because we don't know. We are estimating, we are guessing that this will happen. So I just would like to understand if there are some provisions in that regard, and I think those are my two outstanding questions on that, Chair.
Yourself, Mr.
Kennedy,
please.
I think I'll just clarify the issue around the 34%. I think in regards to the NLTTF, the 34% is not the money that is used by the National Lottery Board. It is the money that comes from the lottery play, like when people bet every Wednesday. 34% of that goes to that trust fund. And then of that trust fund, only about 2% is then paid into the national lotteries as an organization to administer the fund itself. So it is not 34%. And there are specific provisions in the National Lotteries Act that actually clarify exactly how much goes into that. But I think the point that we're making here is that if we look at the existing model and taking into account that the trust fund that we're talking about is going to operate in the same manner that the collecting societies that are operating, there's no reason why we should treat it differently. If, in terms of our projections, it's such that it will make the money and collect on behalf of these right holders, and then it will take a small percentage just to administer that. That is normal and that is acceptable in the model that is already incorporated in the Principal Act around the issues of collecting societies. So we do not think there's a need for us to treat this one differently. However, we acknowledge that in the initial start, it might need some injection of some money to start up. And normally what we do is that we do the request and project for the 3 years, so that in the initial 3 years when we've requested the allocation for the first year, then the first year will then give us an indication. In the next year, we're able to assess. If there's no need for that further injection, then that money would not be required any further. But we normally make our projections on a three-year basis, based on the government cycle. Thanks, Chair. But I just also wanted to conclude on the other issue around the number of patents that have been registered. I think the point that was being made around it was in relation to whether the requirements around prior consent and all of those are not a hindrance or a hurdle. And we do not believe that they are a hurdle. They are a necessity for anyone who wants to use somebody's property. They would need to get permission. And if that permission is denied or is not there, or at least I've not gone to seek for permission, then it means that I cannot go and use that particular property. That's basically the point. So the indication of the statistics around the patents registration process is not an indication of that being a hurdle, but it's just the reality. And I think if you look at the statistics at CIPCO as well, in regards to the number of patents that have been registered, you'll see that also had declined at some point. So it's got nothing to do with whether or not this is a hurdle to people actually entering into some economic activity, or that the law makes it difficult for people now to use the knowledge. People should get permission to use the knowledge anyway. Thanks.
It seems as if the DTI have made that input. There aren't any further clarifications. Am I correct on the whole sustainability issue? Right. Those were the two outstanding ones we had for some time for DTI, as I recall. We now need to come back to those areas that the drafters had requested to be flagged or marked. And I'd ask us to go page by page, if we move in, not page by page, but on the relevant pages, if you would just identify them as you speak to it, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm not going to start with a preamble, but just allow me to say the following, and please bear with me. Sometimes when we're dealing with a matter which is, this is almost becoming a bit legal technical now, the issues that we are going to deal with. And I would like to, in fairness, not only to the honourable members, but also to my colleagues and my friends over here, try to convey it in such a manner that we can properly reflect. Unfortunately, I think even before discussing, we must keep in mind that the legal consequences of what we are going to discuss now and the stance that this Honourable Committee would eventually adopt on those matters are rather important and rather serious. So on that basis, let me start by referring to page 97. Madam Chair, and quite a bit of what I will be saying is not new, it's not novel, so to speak, and it's not original because we've been discussing this on a number of occasions. What you said a while ago, as far as the Honourable Mr. Harris's absence is concerned, with respect, also applies now, but I see his colleague and is over here, so based on what you've said previously, I will simply carry on with the issue.
Mr. Harris, Honourable Swallow. Yeah, I think that we can't go back. You need to tell him. Yeah. Now, because we're not going backwards now, you see. We've had to... Yes, Honourable Albert.
I would just like to remind you that in a few moments I quickly have to run down and do a speech, and I'll be back. I'll be back later. So hopefully I won't miss too much, but I obviously have no certainty of that. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I did not for a moment want to criticise Mr. Harris. I'm not in a position to criticise.
No, not at all. I'm concerned that he's not here either, because these are the issues that he, you know, the issues that you're raising now have been flagged, and we certainly need to deal with them.
I'm going to mention it because he has shown so much interest in what we are about to discuss. But be that as it may, I will then simply
please
depart.
Continue.
Madam Chair, I'm not going to read it. It's on page 97 of our bill. The section is 53, capital F. It deals with infringement exceptions and royalties, and now we have benefits as well. The issues that arise are the following. If this ban would commence, there would be three different kinds of designs. There will be the designs that we currently find in the Principal Act, in the Designs Act. There will also be the indigenous designs, in respect of which the indigenous communities are the authors. And the third category will be the derivative indigenous designs. The word there says it all, those derivative indigenous designs would in essence or in substance be derived from indigenous designs. The bill commences and an indigenous community would approach, I will refer to the registrar just for the sake of the argument, would approach the registrar and seek registration of an indigenous design. There's a definition. I'm not going to read it. The application is considered and the indigenous design is registered in the appropriate register. But that indigenous design that has been registered registered, a substantial portion thereof relates, or if we wish, is derived from, let me rather say relates, to an existing design. That design has been in existence in terms of the current law. It is there, the right is vested. So the question arises, what is the relationship between the proprietor of that registered design, the old design, and the indigenous community being the proprietor of the indigenous design? The way we see it as the bill stands, if there is a 70% relationship between those two designs, the indigenous community will simply be in a position to approach the proprietor of that existing design and seek for a benefit sharing agreement to be entered into and the necessary royalties to be paid. The next question is, would the indigenous community be obliged to seek registration in order to get the necessary protection in terms of this bill? The way we read it, and I've discussed this with my colleagues during the break, the way we read it, the answer is yes. In order to enjoy the protection provided for in this bill, the indigenous communities would indeed be obliged to seek registration of that indigenous design. Without registration, the protection would not exist. As I also discussed with my colleagues during the break, as to whether that position reflects the policy consideration that should be underlying this matter, and the answer is no. If we refer to the terminology in this bill, we will see that it speaks to the registered proprietor of an indigenous design. Now, in order to be a registered proprietor, that is the indigenous community, there must be registration. So without registration, the protection is not there. And I think maybe for purposes of our discussion, I should leave it there for the moment and let us discuss on this single principle alone. The argument being that why should the indigenous community be obliged to register the indigenous design? Why can the protection not be afforded merely on the basis of the indigenous design being in existence? If that would be indeed the policy stance adopted by this honourable committee, then we as drafters will have to chop and change to this bill and make further changes to that effect. Before I take the matter further, may I seek your permission that we pause there and we reflect on that issue alone, Madam Chair.
Yes, I think that this is a very important point that's come up. Honourable Mabasa?
Corporate Chair, I think that the community that has a right to a design or to, you know, a manufactured good in the way it is expressed, should automatically be given first preference. It should be assumed that it belongs to them. It belongs to that community. So that the community does not have to go through the very difficult punitive measures of registering. And besides, we are struggling with this bill now. For how long will it take the community to appreciate and to understand this, the act that will come out of here? What processes will have been taken to ensure that members of the community have this as a tool? And I think we have the answer to that question, that practically very little of this tool will reach the community. It is only the members that will be having legal tools amongst, you know, lawyers in their employ, but that's not a very common practice. So the very latter expression that was expressed by Advocate Freedom, I would move that that is what the committee must strive for. Thanks, Colleague.
Yes, thank you, Honourable Obasa. Honourable Vandermeer.
Chair, I would just like to ask Advocate Freedom if we're only talking about design. Or are we talking about trademarks?
For the moment, we're purely focusing on those portions in designs.
Because I'm trying to understand whether... So you're basically saying, in terms of this current as the way it stands, the community must register the trademark, the design, and therefore they have to have either a community protocol or a juristic purpose. So it is compulsory in this section for them to form some sort of collaboration, a written down agreement, either through juristic person or a protocol arrangement where they identify a natural person as the representative. Yes?
Can we turn to page 97, Madam Chair? Page 97, right at the top there, and maybe we should read. Notwithstanding those subsections, and there is the terminology, the registered proprietor of a traditional design. There's a definition of a traditional design. It can be either an indigenous design or a derivative indigenous design. But what we are saying, these words clearly suggest that in order, and this proprietor here is the indigenous community, and that these words clearly suggest that registration is a prerequisite for enjoying this protection. The same terminology is to be found in other places in the bill as well, so that issue is clear. We're not saying that, indeed, we are of the view that that, with respect, should not be the policy. But for the moment, I'm not speaking on the policy score. We're merely speaking on what is the meaning to be attached to these words as they currently stand. So registration is a prerequisite for the necessary protection in this bill.
This is where I'm confused. Is it a prerequisite for the protection of a design and a trademark, or is it a prerequisite for the protection of all four aspects of what we're dealing with here, of indigenous knowledge of all four aspects of this bill?
If I can, for instance, refer to copyright, in order to enjoy the necessary protection there, registration of the copyright is not a prerequisite at all. If you would like to do it because it's easier to prove the existence of your right, then you've got the discretion to do so. But in copyright, for instance, it is clearly not a prerequisite, as it is here for designs.
Three, you see, or four.
My colleagues have just assisted me here just to make sure. On trademarks, same thing, it's a requirement.
Maybe if the advocate could answer, what would make people not challenge that in terms of the law? What would make them not challenge that? In the other areas like design, it is registered, and in copyright it isn't. What legal stance do we have, I think, or how strong or how weak will we be in terms of people referring to the other parts being a prerequisite to register?
I'm sure that my colleagues will come in later, but let me take the liberty and maybe take it a step forward. And maybe be frank in saying the following. We can simply not see why the, if there is an indigenous design in existence and having been used by an indigenous community, why it should not be protected, irrespective of the fact that it has not been registered. I think that is the policy consideration to be discussed. McDonald will maybe later refer to another possibility of saying that the right does not need to be registered as such, but there must be recordal of that right. And then by virtue of the recordal, the protection in terms of this law will be afforded to the community. But I'm getting into the policy side of the matter now. I'm not the right person to speak there.
Thank you, Chair. I want to understand that we're dealing with the beneficiation or the royalties of this. So first of all, if there is a existing, because we're talking about an existing trademark or design, in this case, the design. And if you want to commercially benefit, or the community needs to commercially benefit from that design or that trademark, then you need to register. And I think that has got to be a obligation on to register in order to benefit. It's another story if you don't want to financially benefit. But I think if it's a beneficiation of a commercial value, the obligation should definitely be there. But just a following question on the on a bit on the discussions as we went on. It was the 70% relationship on design and the actual determination of the 70% of that. In the regulations, because obviously it's got to appear there, Have we got like a point system to say that you've got to compare, you know, certain things to make up your 70%, or how do you get to your 70%? Because it's easy to say that 70% has got to be agreed on, but I mean, if there's no technical specification that it, or criteria that's going to talk to the 70%, I do foresee some loopholes or persons that can say, no, I've got 68%, you know, how do you get to 70%, you know, and I'm just wanted to understand that in order to close a loophole where someone can bypass the system, because I just would like to understand that from DTI, if they've really considered the criteria around the 70% issue.
You know what's worrying me here? And perhaps I'm just not getting a handle around it, Advocate Stratum. I somehow was of the impression, as we were going through this, that registration as such was not compulsory. Let's try to test this. Now, you may say, well, no, it's not compulsory. However, to benefit commercially, it must be compulsory. Now, where I'm going with this is that if you're not aware, you have got your indigenous design and this kind of thing, and you're not aware that, in fact, there is someone currently who has exploited that without, you know, being outside the law as it is currently. But they operate for some time. And now a younger member within the community says, oh, we can get some of this, you know, it's our design. Would you be able then, at that late stage, wouldn't it have been immediate, to say, well, we weren't aware of this until now, even though 3 years has passed. Are they able then to get that form of compensation? Or because they didn't register it, there's no claim that they have. They become compulsory to register to benefit. I'm just trying to get a handle around that. Honourable Van der Merwe?
Well, Chair, as I understand it, there's always been a requirement to register a design or a trademark. That is intellectual property requires that. A design or a... And copyright, you don't have to register. So, I mean, they're three different animals, essentially, but McDonald disagrees with me.
Mr.
Nyetse Tenzi. No, thanks. I think all along we have been saying, let's go back to the hereditary one because it becomes very simple. Hereditary, whether it's copyright or trademark or design, raw as it is, may or may not qualify as a trademark, may or may not. But there are others that may, might have been registered for whatever reason, may or may not have, may not meet the standard of registration, as an example, raw as it is. So we talk about this issue of recorder for easy of proving ownership. That's what we have been talking about. Yes, recorder, not registration. Recorder, putting it in the database for ease of reference to any other person who may want to come and ask a portion, not answering the 70% or whatever test criteria. We say anything that forms substantial part, and I think Ms. Shavangus talked about the jurisprudence. We use the greater part or whatever. She went vehemently against that to say, there is enough jurisprudence that use the word substantial part to show blah, blah, blah. But all in all is that we said the fact that somebody is not in the database, which is optional, does not mean that you forfeit protection. However, if somebody comes and says, this is mine now, say raw as it is, it will be easy. It will be easy if you are in the recorder system. But if you are not there, during registration process, the community can object during the registration process to say, no, there is nothing new, there is no novelty here, blah, 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 all those things. I think these are the policy issues which we are now saying, let us constellate and then come to a conclusion of the wedding of the deal in the area of design as it stands. Thanks.
Just in fairness, can I refer to page 92 of the book, right at the top? We are here in the section that deals with traditional designs eligible for registration. And then top of page 92, an indigenous community may in the prescribed manner and payment of the fees apply for registration of an indigenous design. But this provision does not say that registration is compulsory. It is discretionary. But then unfortunately, we cannot stop there. If we then go to page 97, just on page 97, we've got two specific references clearly indicating that registration is a requirement. The first one is right at the top. We've already referred to that one. Notwithstanding those sections, the registered proprietor of a traditional design. If we go lower down, where it deals with payment of royalties, it's just below the middle of the page, on the same page, 97. Any such, if from the provider there, it's about the middle of the page,
page 97, that black portion, provided that if any commercial benefit is derived from any such act, a royalty, benefit, or both shall be paid by such person, that such person is the proprietor of the existing design, and shall be paid to whom? To the proprietor of the traditional design. Then we've got that same wording again, and all that I'm saying, and we are in agreement on this, all that we're putting to the committee is for the committee to consider this requirement as to whether on the basis of policy it is appropriate to require the community in order to enjoy their royalties to seek registration of the right.
Peter, and then I will come to yourself.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, it is a policy matter. But further to what Avgis Trillum has stated, if you look at and on page 98, sub 2, this provision is in all the other principal acts. It states that any person who has acquired rights as contemplated in subsection 1 must comply with 53B3. Which means now, Chairperson, this person who has been benefiting from these rights must approach the indigenous community and obtain consent and obtain a benefit sharing agreement. Right. But now this provision doesn't require the indigenous community to be a registered proprietor before acquiring that benefit from that person. Yes, Chairperson, there is an unintended consequence here. Well, the solution would be to remove the registered part in sub 1, then obviously the committee will have to decide that on that issue. But I think there is a bit of a or an unintended consequence in this issue. Thank you, Chairperson.
In sub 1, top of page
53F1, that requires the indigenous community to be a registered owner before benefiting.
Okay, we'll come to the legal issues in a minute, just on that one. Honourable Harris?
Chair, I'm a little bit surprised to come into this discussion. It seems bizarre. The as far as I understand it, as Honourable Fundam ever said, designs and trademarks require registration. We're trying to extend designs to include traditional designs. They require registration. There's no other way that we could design it, if you excuse the pun. Designs must be registered. I did miss the beginning of this, so I'm not sure what the justification for changing it would be, but this is one issue where we believe traditional design should get protection as designs, formally, you know, because we're not proposing any different type of protection as we are with copyright. So it's an equivalent protection as a design, therefore it must be registered in a register as the Designs Act calls for.
Point is that there was a difference between registration and recordal as such, and that in certain areas registration was not compulsory, but yet in the 53F1 it was. In fact, the latest section that has just been referred to by Advocate Quetta makes it clear that it was not compulsory in order to benefit. Am I correct, Advocate
Quetta? That's what the means, Chairperson. If you read it together with 53B3 and the other sections of the bill dealing with this issue.
Where we are is we're tackling these areas that were flagged by the drafters when you walked in. This was the area, one of the first areas we are dealing with. Honourable Van der Merwe, you were going to...
The point that I wanted to make was, I don't know why we jumped to design now. I thought we were going to be on page 41 where there's a green bit that we were asked to hold that the lawyers were going to come back to us after lunch and discuss. I think that is to do with the whole question of expropriating a right or not expropriating a right. Say the obligation shall continue to hold his or her copyright in the manner he is. Now, that little paragraph is repeated through the other two, and I thought if we got... I'm confused by going straight to design, because I do think design and trademark treat intellectual property differently. And then when we come to design, we can discuss whether recorder gives sufficient definition to the community to hold and be able to use their rights for benefit. So I don't know if I'm wrong, but that was my understanding. I thought we were going to be on page 41 and start with this under copyright here, which is then carried through to the others.
I know that the drafting team chose to just sort of take us across to that, and they must have had a reason. But it may, you know, seeing as we're grappling just with that part to reach some form of consensus, why don't we go back? Because that was the first flagging issue or part issue. I just want to make certain. We just said deal with what was part. And I think it was the first parked issue, as you put it, or flagged issue. So, are you able to address that one? And perhaps that will lead on and almost make a create a platform for a better understanding. But thank you very much. Page 41 then, Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. If we look at page 41... Maybe if I can give some background as to where Johan is coming from. What we have is, in fact, Johan is busy making the argument when an issue that actually comes within this example came up and he sought to ask, let's get a decision on that first. But the example that he's making is that you have a current right. In this instance, it will be a copyright on page 41. Yeah, there will be a copyright. That copyright in a, let's say, artistic work is currently plain and simple artistic work. Whether the content is about someone getting lost on the mountain or whether the content is about Jackal and Wolf, which has some indigenous background. Will simply be artistic work. Okay. Then this bill will come into operation. Now you will have two further types of works. You will have an indigenous work, which is the actual story of Jackal and Wolf or Jackal and Dog or whatever, or Jackal and Lion. You will have that some almost... You will have this original story that actually, when I say original, was original a couple of hundred years ago was when it originated, but has been passed down from generation to generation and is really part of a community's heritage. So we will have copyright in that story. Okay. Then what you will also have is this right that I spoke about of first, the one that's currently existing. The work that deals with someone getting lost on the mountain will remain artistic work, literary work, whatever, depending on the type of the work that it takes. But the work that dealt with the legend, with the Jackal and Lion story, that work will now be known as derivative indigenous work. Okay. So that's why we say there's three types of works that you have now. And the question is, how do these interact with each other? Now, in practice, it only makes sense that the person who wrote a story about Jackal and Lion before this bill came into operation will have a single right in respect of that story. He can't say to exclusive books, I'm selling this to you as a normal literary work, and then I'm also selling it to you as a derivative literary work. It just doesn't make sense. They will say to him, but this is one book. What is your problem? So in practice, there might not be a real problem with the fact that there's these two types of work. But the concern was raised that what are we doing with this copyright in the original work? Is it not the same? Should we, what if anything happens in this almost transitional period, which is also where I think that the transitional sections that Shravanga was speaking about came from. In this transit period, how do we deal with this? So from the drafter's point of view, even though, like I said, in practice, maybe not really this will be a problem, but to make it very clear, and actually, as Honorable Fanamavi indicated, it does feel a little bit with the expropriation as well, by accident, wasn't intended. But what we are saying here on page 41 now is that this person who wrote the story about Jacqueline Lyon before the bill, we've created certain obligations. This person must approach the community, must enter the benefit sharing agreement, and must notify the commission that his or her story has aspects of Indigenous knowledge in it. And also, after the benefit sharing agreement has been signed, must pay certain royalties or benefits to the community, must give training or whatever. But the question is, does this thing necessarily mean that anything else in this bill must apply to this person who was quite happy with his copyright before this bill came into existence? He had proper rights, he didn't have a problem in respect of protection. Why should he now be subject to what we have here? We know the benefit sharing, we know the royalties, we want that to be subject. So what we thought was, look, if we go to the essence of what we want, we want this person to pay royalties, to acknowledge the community, and to have an agreement with the community. So if we say that these three obligations, notify the commission, enter into a benefit agreement, pay royalties, those three, say for the obligations contemplated in subsections 3 and 5, which are those three, such person, meaning the owner of this copyright in the book of The Lion and the Jackal, shall continue to hold his or her copyright in the manner he or she has done prior to commencement of this bill. So, exactly what I've just said. This person will continue, the protection that he has currently will continue to go on. There will be no difference. It will be exactly the same. Save for those three requirements. So that is what that section says. Pulling that through, shall we stop here first, or shall I pull it through to the other two?
Yeah, pull it through.
Okay. Dean, notify the commission. Enter into an agreement with the community, and those two requirements you will find on page 32. That is where they are. Section 28B, subsection 4, B, and C. And also to pay royalties, which in this instance you will find on page 42, section 28G, subsection 5. So those are the three that must be complied with. But other than that, this bill will not affect that owner. Pulling this through to trademarks and designs, the same principle applies. If you've registered your trademark or it is a well-known trademark, maybe let's go to that specific section. On page 74, section 43F, subsection 2B. Now, this reads almost word for word the same. there might be two or three words changed just so that it fits into the sentence. Exactly the same aspect. If a person currently is the holder of a trademark, whether that trademark is registered or can be regarded as well known. Those are the two circumstances for trademarks currently where you will have a right. So that right currently can exist in respect of normal marks. It could be the mark, now I wanted to say the mountain and then I realized, oh, there actually we might have a problem. A mark of a car, that is a trademark, or it could be a mark similar to a rock painting. Now, currently, as it stands, that's simply a mark. There's no distinction between those two. Simply a mark. When this bill comes into operation, you will have new marks. The one will be anything that is an indigenous term or expression, which could be the rock art, like I've said, or a geographical indication. And if those, like your rock art, is found in the trademark that currently exists, that current trademark will become derivative. So that is where we are. Now again, you have the same situation. You have a current trademark, you have the indigenous term or expression that constitutes a collective or a certificate trademark, and you have the derivative of that. And again the question comes, could there be any conflict? At this point in time, the Act is exactly the same, or will be exactly the same, so there won't be. But the question is, what is this now? Where must this fall? Must this person comply with the old Act? Must I comply with the new chapter? So again, this subsection B indicates that, no, for you who currently owns this mark, all we want you to do is to inform the Commission that the mark contains indigenous knowledge. We want you to enter into a benefit sharing agreement with the community so that you acknowledge where you got it from, and we want you to pay royalties. So say for those, you will hold your mark before this bill came into operation. Actually, as if this bill didn't come into operation at all. So there will be no change for you. Then going to design, exactly the same principle there. On page 98, section 53F, subsection 2B. So again, the 98, subsection 53F 2B. So exactly the same. We have a design currently, and I'm not going to go into aesthetic or functional because it will apply to all of them. So the design might have, in fact, the one that I like to use here is those little round huts that you get. And there's actually some like climate control, etc., that works because of the shape and so on. So if someone has used that little round hut in his design for a conference center and saying, I'm using this, and the overall aspect of this conference center is actually in this format because then I don't have to use air conditioning. I'm not saying it is, but as an example, that would be a functional design because that would be the reason for that design. But it has an indigenous component. Currently, however, that is not relevant. Currently, that is simply a functional design. Period. That's what it is. When this bill comes into operation, that design will become a derivative indigenous design because it speaks to something indigenous. So the same question comes up. Do we want this person to have to do weird stuff or whatever that might be under this bill? Not that they are, but that seems to be the argument. And the answer is simply no. We want this person to inform the Commission, enter a benefit sharing agreement, pay royalties. So again, this section says, as long as you do those things, you will hold your right in this design as you did before. Let me maybe stop there for now because that explains this section. I think after the questions that you might have from here, Johan's question becomes rather relevant. because that is almost the next step. From when do you acknowledge and where do you acknowledge and so on?
Intervene at this particular point, because Honourable Member Murphy, you've had your hands up a long time now. I don't know if it's been overtaken. You still want it up.
Yeah.
And then I know Honourable Salah put his hand up recently, so and Honourable Smala. So let's just have these. And I must say, I'm now getting a clearer understanding. Thanks.
I think that in my view, that new green portion, starting with SAVE in the various things, has clarified considerably the questions that have been raised by some members of this committee over the expropriation issue or the holding of the right and the right of the right holder to hold that right. And it certainly, I think, makes it clear that there will be no parallel, in my view, parallel right held by such a person. But the question is, how does this right holder know that there's another person who has an Indigenous mark? That's what we have to unravel. We have to say, okay, say there's a round hut and somebody has taken out a trademark on this and this bill comes into force. Unless the community whose Indigenous knowledge is that hut comes forward to claim that right, that guy will never know he's got a derivative, if you know what I'm saying. So what we need to discuss is how do our communities claim their birthright? Now, that's where we get to the question of whether they need a protocol or a registration or a recorder or whatever it is. I don't know if I'm clear. It's certainly clear in my mind that I'm in favor of this new clause which protects somebody who's already got the book about folklore or whatever, but I'm not clear about how we ensure that the traditional community, or the Indigenous community, let's get the word straight, is actually going to claim the original work. How will they? I'll stop this.
Are you saying? I mean, they wouldn't know about it anyway. Perhaps wouldn't. Well, are you saying they don't know they're protected?
Well, I'm saying, say I'm a Ndebele person, and I have this exquisite design around my house. As we all know, there's a Ndebele design. It comes from that community. It's very distinctive. But there's somebody who's making huts out of that for sale somewhere and making a profit out of it. When this bill comes into line, and I'm the Ndebele community, what must I do to claim my right?
Yeah, these things are beginning to answer each other. When we earlier on debated against the issue of registration, it was in the context of business. It was in the context of indigenous existing communities now having to register their existence. And we were saying, no, that cannot happen. These people and who they are and what they are and what their indigenous knowledge is there. All we have to do is to protect it. Now, as we continued, we seemed to get paranoid with the word registration, that this registration comes up with making things difficult for people in their own land. Now, when this registration comes, it comes when that is still in our mind. But I seem to be reading, and correct me if I'm wrong, to be reading this registration to be answering your question, Honorable Van der Velde, to be saying, the principle of registration of business is already in his existence anyway, let alone the issue of indigenous people. When you get into business, you register your business. That is already happening. That's why we have CIDCO. Now, the question that Honorable Panorama is asking to say, how are you going to know that this somebody somewhere is playing around with your indigenous knowledge? This registration obviously begins to register those, not really the community for their existence, but it registers those that are in charge or that are having these things to say, now that you have this, and it becomes clear that this thing belongs to other people, there are a number of things that you must do. Among others, you must register this business. You must enter into agreement with the origin of the designer. And you must have what is the other? The royalties of the
company. Yeah.
And you must pay royalties. Now, that process is actually not addressing the community itself, isn't it? It's addressing this person that has been running the business free all the time. But now you are going to have to follow the business principles, but also remember that the Act now requires of you to give a share to those that own this thing. I seem to think it's... Yes. So it answers that question of how is that person going to know?
But I wanted to add one thing.
The other hands up, so we just can't have a general, there's four hands up now with even the drafter's hands.
No, I was just going to say, I made the distinction between copyright and designer.
Yeah. So we're really going to have like one at a time then, and as eager as we are. Right, Honourable Smala.
Gee, I want to say that anything that are registered at CIPC is a matter of pulling out data and get that out. But then there are businesses that haven't registered but does use trademark. And it's the same thing of or not just trademark, but various designs or patents or whatever they're doing. And it's how you're going to get them to be able to link the role that the department has got to go and play, both sides of the story, in order to get that. And that is going to be a work in progress. It's not going to be an easy task. In these clauses, because it was fundamental when Johan spoke earlier, when he was referring to a criteria that has got to be met, the 70%, you referred to 70%, and then Mr. Nesitendis referred to a hybrid format, people that certain issues that don't, that doesn't reach the criteria of 70%. And we're not referring, I don't see a specific line saying we're referring to a criteria that must be met, although how the criteria is being made up is somewhere in the regulations. But I don't see the link talking to that. The second one I wanted to, if I can get a little bit of assistance, will go to the design. And this will be where the architects, in when this actually comes into place, people that does drawings, architect buildings, I want to understand that. And we're building a new parliament with a new hut, and I don't know what the specs and everything of that is involved. But obviously there's a bit of a, I can see the indigenous side of where we're going into that. And what I wanted to understand is, if an architect does draw up a design. And a company derives commercial value from that design, because I wanted to understand, because now I'm renting that premises out as an investor. I built this, and I'm renting it to Parliament. Parliament rents building X from us, or whatever you, but it's just a small example. Does that mean I will have got to go into some sort of an agreement also, because I want to understand the implication of how far this goes out. Thank you.
Advocate Strait, you also had your hand at some point when the left chair, you know, were really engaging, and then your hand went up, and was it up? No, because, you know, I wasn't sure, because it went right up. Yes, okay.
Maybe by referring merely to this, it would almost by implication answer the question that has just been posed. On page 90, the issue as to whether these rights should be registered, Madam Chair, my only concern at the moment is, maybe I haven't brought it across in the proper manner. My only concern is that the policy intended here is not reflected in the wording of the bill. Page 90, close to the top, the heading, application to traditional designs. And remember, this will now be in the Principal Act, in the Designs Act. Sub 2, only sub 2. The provisions of this Act shall apply in respect of all registered traditional designs. There the matter is put to rest, Madam Chair. So in your example, if that architect latching on to the design of that little hut, and that indigenous design in respect of that hut is not registered, the architect can carry on and do as he or she pleases. I'll stop there, Madam Chair. All that I'm asking is, let us reflect on, because this is factually the position in the bill, I see it as being inconsistent with a policy. That is all.
Certainly the point you're making would appear to have some substance, because we're trying now to protect the indigenous knowledge, etc., and that includes these designs, and the now we have a spanner, because this is a Principal Act. Am I right? The Principal Act.
This is an insertion, but it will be inserted into the Principal Act. And clearly saying, I'm not going to repeat it, Madam Chair. Yeah.
Gosh, you know, I'm just looking, and sometimes, you know, I can see right now everyone's grappling with this, and maybe a 5-minute informal chat, because all of us now look a bit worried about the whole issue. It was just as I thought I'd fully understood the whole matter and we could move. And now, Advocate Stratum, you pull out this cat and bunny. No. I think we need a bit of a 5-minute break, guys. Page 90. No, look, you know what? This is... it seemed to be on the one hand quite clear, but on the other hand I think members will want to just clarify one or two points before making a decision on the matter. So I'm just ensuring that we've got most of the people on board here, including yourself, Ms. Hurling. And we start off again. So we're really in the kind of questions, clarification, before moving forward. I think that's where we are. Are there any other questions from the table here, from the members, before we move forward on this one? Honourable Van der Merwe?
What sort of a question are you asking? Because I've got an idea. Okay.
Perhaps there's no more need for questions. Let's put forward proposals.
Okay. Well, we've had our discussion, and I've also just had a brief word with Advocate Sandra Madza, who informs me that in the Designs Act, there are two definitions, one of a registered proprietor and one of a proprietor. So we could get rid of the question of registered proprietor if we wished. Secondly, in trademarks, you can just go like this if it's wrong and like this if it's wrong. And in trademarks, a similar situation that acknowledged known trademarks are recognized in that legislation. Now, amongst us, we talked about forcing communities to register when we know that they don't have access to computers and they don't have access to people flying to Joburg and lodging with their papers and so on and making all those registers. So the policy principle is correct, that we want the right to be their right whether they register it or not. That's the policy principle is correct. However, it leaves us with a conundrum that if they register, they can claim their right if they register. If they don't register, no. Where do they? How do they claim this right? You know, if they don't register and they own it, how are they going to claim it? If they do register and they own it, how do they claim it? And we really talked around the responsibility of the DTI in this regard, because even one member suggested that we might need a team of unemployed graduates to go around the country. It's actually not funny. I mean, it does sound a bit funny, but it's, you know, and identify the indigenous knowledge that exists in the community to enable them to form part of the process. Because at the current time, given the example that I like to use, which is a Ndebele design, it's a clear example of indigenous design. The Bene people have for hundreds and hundreds of years been painting these beautiful designs, and they are used ubiquitously by other people for profit. Now, how does that community now claim that ownership as a traditional indigenous rather design? And we're going to need to have a team of people, perhaps, that goes around assisting communities, but also identifying other areas of traditional design. So what I'm saying is two things. First, I think we need to get an onus on the government to provide assistance in identification and claiming of those indigenous rights and knowledge. And second of all, we need to preserve the principal policy position of that you don't have to, that the right is yours right from the beginning without the necessity to register it. Thanks.
So it really was, I think, captured quite well what the the committee secretary has just put across to me here in writing as you were talking. He was saying that DST is busy piloting exactly such a project of field workers, you know, etc. So that was inherited from just two different sources. But what about the other hands that I saw on my right, Honourable Harris?
I just appreciate that the one lawyer we actually have on this side of the table is listening to my argument. he happens to be sitting next to me.
No one, as a lawyer, I can start off.
Very flexible. Chair, I have serious concerns about breaching the fundamental principle of that's contained in both the design protection of designs and protection of trademarks that require registration at the very least. currently. And trademarks also happen to require things like it actually being used in day-to-day activities. But nevertheless, the registration requirement is fundamental to the type and species, to these two types and species of IP. And we're firmly in support of giving Indigenous works protection in terms of these two laws, but firmly against compromising the fundamental registration requirements in either of them. If normal designs and normal trademarks need to be registered, the same needs to apply to Indigenous and traditional works.
On the table, Honorable Khadebe.
Honorable Chairperson, I want to make another example. Yes. The one of the most expensive stadiums we'll ever come across in the country is the First National Bank Stadium. That First National Bank Stadium is made out of a calabash. So definitely the calabash is a design of the African community. So those guys have made billions out of that. They've made a lot of money. So what is critical here is that you can go to the Subi Nation, to the Sotho Nation, to the Swazi Nation. They never registered that because they didn't know that they had to register. They had to register that design. They don't even know that there's such a thing as a register. So to want us to tell us that those people must forfeit now, because you can see that FNP stadium is a derivative from a particular Indigenous community design. It's a derivative. So there must be benefit. So that's why, that on a full regard, Chair, is that we say the honor of helping those people to register, it must come from the side of government. So that's why that the Department of Science and Technology project of going back to those guys is a worthy exercise. But what we can do here, because the IT is unique, we can compare that right now. But as we discover that, then the people will be obliged to go and register. But automatically we know that guy who designed the FNP stadium, he can never ever claim that it is his design. It's impossible. He can never claim that it is. So then now the owner to be around the Department of Trade and Industry or science to go and check who first came with this design. And then once they check those people, and then that guy must come and do a profit sharing there. So I think that thing must be confessed. We know that that's uniqueness. That's the uniqueness of this type of knowledge. I think that it must be supported by government. That's why that we expect it from the side of the DTI. When coming to costing the implication of this, or costing the application of this act, that aspect must be covered. Yeah.
So you were saying, I just want to clarify this, Honourable Khadebe. Honourable Khadebe, just want to clarify this, that just means the example you used about the calabash, you weren't seeing it as a derivative from the Indigenous, but, yeah, because it's a derivative from the, okay, because as we move across, yeah. Thank you. Honourable, Honourable
Albert. Madam Chair, thank you. I sort of missed the whole debate, but I think I got the gist of it now. I must say my instinct would be that it doesn't make sense to not have a registration for certain items in terms of the designs and copyright, not the copyright, the trademark act. However, I think there might be a way to overcome this problem. As I said, one can straddle many positions. In the Trademark Act, there's already a provision called, because of globalization, it's called the well-known trademarks rule, which is a well-known trademark like McDonald's or Coca-Cola that everybody knows cannot be appropriated because any person, no matter where he lives, would probably know that Coca-Cola doesn't belong to him or her. And maybe one can have a localization approach. or an indigenous approach, if we call it that, where you say that something that is well known, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, maybe the Kaladesh, or something that instinctively we know belongs to somebody else. Yeah. Then that rule kicks in with its requirements, and I'm not sure about case. I'm not aware of what a case law has said, but I think they have refined the requirements in case law as well. But that could perhaps be explored as a solution. Because the other thing is, if something is not registered, if there's no database, then it's very difficult for people, for bona fide business people who actually have a theme. They have a theme of using indigenous people in a restaurant or whatever the case may be, can land in hot water, because they must have some way of knowing that there's a database that they can go search. And also government, as you have said, there's a obligation on government to go and to the rural communities and to all communities basically and inform them of these new rights, if I can call it that. So it's something of both. And I think if we can look at that well-known trademarks, it doesn't appear in designs, though. So designs is sort of still out there, but one might be able to do it in trademarks. And perhaps, I don't know if there's time to do research on these things, but if it's going to be in designs, then there must be a good case for that, because designs is a purely registration-based right that's created, and it's there for a reason. If we divert from that road, we must have a very good reason as well. In the end of the day, thank you.
Valuable input there. I want to give it to the grafters to look at. Let's take Mr. Nyetsi Tenzi and then the grafters.
No, thanks. We are happy that the policy position is clear that all hereditary intellectual property does not have to be registered. I think that is the policy. Those who wish to come to the party may record, but not as a compulsory issue. So the issue of awareness, the DDG will talk about it, but we should not go out to communities forcing them to reveal their hereditary indigenous knowledge. They may have protected it through trade secrets, like Cook. They might have chosen not to come to the party because they know how to protect themselves. But I'm just emphasizing to say, if we agree that we don't have to force these people to register, it's enough for me. If they come for recorders, it's okay. But if they choose to protect it through trade secret, let it be okay. Let's see how the bill reflects that policy position. Thanks.
We get Advocate Van der Merwe well, because I think we can't have several discussions. Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we can actually quite agree on the Trademarks Act. Because we have the well-known mark, it is quite possible to fix. In fact, it was pretty wild. There were some discussions gone through the two amendments of trademarks and design. And actually, all that we need to do is, where it speaks about a registered owner, we just remove registered. So it's quite possible to do that in respect of trademarks, even in design, but let's speak about design separately. In respect of trademarks, what will happen is that we will retain the possibility of registration. And an indigenous community would be still allowed to come and register. And in terms of Section 43A, where we incorporate the remainder of the Act insofar as it can be applied, by that implication, we are incorporating the principle of well-known marks into traditional trademarks as well. So I don't think there will be a problem there. In respect of design, It's unfortunately something that I think not even now we'll be able to pronounce on it. It is something that will have to be tested. Doesn't mean that we cannot do it, but it will have to be tested. The Designs Act does provide, as Honourable Van der Merwe pointed out, for a proprietor. And then it speaks about a proprietor can do X, Y, and Z. And the proprietor is actually indicated as the person with whom the design has originated. And then, as Honourable Smiler pointed out, there are a number of designs at the moment which aren't registered. It is going to be, in my opinion, something for the DTI to look at to make sure that communities actually do register. Because proving what you have is going to be very difficult if you don't have something registered. But if we also take out the registered proprietor and we just keep the term proprietor, which the Act currently provides for, may not do X, Y, Z or may do X, Y, Z, I think the implication will be that the community who created that design will have certain rights. And then as Mongameli merely pointed out, the person who is currently using or wants to use must approach the community to do a benefit sharing agreement. So if we take out that registered proprietor, it actually means that we are to some extent giving this community some rights of protection. I think in any event you will find that there might be designs that are brought forward for registration where there might already be an argument, but this is a very well-known design. This is state-of-the-art already. Why you can't be registering this? So perhaps that is something that we can go on. But we are changing, especially in design, we are changing how things work. But then as my comment on copyright was before, we might say on the other side that this is new law that we're creating. And the law needs to expand. And make provision for this. It's not that it speaks. It's not that it is so contradictory that it will kill off something. In my opinion, anyway, I think there are many others that would disagree with me, and I will accept their disagreement. But then also, as the Honourable Alva said, as a lawyer, you know, we can do both sides. So we know that there will be those who oppose. The aspect, even if we have it like this, even if we say, look, trademarks, we will accept that you don't have to register. There is a principle of well-known trademarks. If we expand that principle to design, it does not resolve the issue of how the community will protect or how the person who currently uses will be forced to approach the community. But that, unfortunately, is not something that we can address in this bill. That will have to be for DTI to deal with.
Elvis, Honourable Salah, Honourable Van der Merwe.
I'm just trying to wrap my head around this thing. The other side of the argument is that if I want to start a business, for instance, and let's say I'm building a theme park and I'm using themes from indigenous communities. Built this theme park. Walt Disney does that in America. They've got all Africa, the Europe, and so on. I must, as a legitimate businessman, be able to do a due diligence, or at least ask my lawyers or the people who work for me, my project manager, to do a due diligence on the whole project, which includes using trademarks, using various IP, and so forth. So there would need to be a bona fide register search, and if something is not in a register, it does create problems because something can come back to bite them. And for business to have that uncertainty, to face that uncertainty, they would rather not actually invest in the end of the day. So we've got to allay that fear somehow. My thinking is that one could say that you don't need to register necessary to be protected, because if it's in trademark, you have common law trademark. But in this case, one would say that, okay, well, you haven't registered your items, your cultural artifacts or items, in terms of the Trademarks Act. But now you see there's somebody using it. Now you want to stake a claim or you want to stop the person. But if you want to do that, then you have to register. So if you want to enforce your rights, then you have to take the instrument up and make yourself known, if I can call it that. Subject to certain ways to protect indigenous knowledge that might still want to stay secret somehow. I don't know how one would do that, but I'm having trouble thinking of examples. But I think if you want to step up to the plate and say, look, this is mine, you cannot use it, and it's not registered, then to enforce it, you must then register. I think that might be a sort of a solution. Thank you.
That's something put forward, tabled and proposed, Honourable Salah.
In fact, I think it is important in the first place for us to recognize the fact that we are changing history. This is not just an easy matter of cut and paste. We know where our society comes from, skewed as it is, and we know that the issue we are dealing with is how sensitive to those that we represent. And we have a duty to affirm them. I don't want this house to move from a point that we, as the African National Congress, speak against registration. But we must understand that we are speaking about that section of society that we know what their reaction will be now, at this stage. We come a long way from the process. We have a very long way ahead to change the mindset. In our language, we call it national democratic revolution. This revolution is not a one-day event or two-day event. Now, what I am going to say, I have not actually discussed with my colleagues. They might speak against me. I will accept it. The issue relating to the fact that we cannot force people into a system, but equally not working against the principle of database completely. There were mentioned here that registration or non-registration, those kinds of things. Now, I'm worried about the options of either or. And in my view, could be the issue of not forcing, but allowing those who volunteer to can come into the system. In other words, the facility for people to register must be there. Those that say can come into register voluntarily must be allowed to do so. But as it is the interest of the department to see, to build up a database, see some ways through which you can create some incentive for people to seek court. But simultaneously, we must understand that we're taking two people here. This one, you can bring an incentive to say, if you register, then you can be able to make a claim against those that are using your indigenous knowledge. But this one, you must say, come and register so that you can start losing from your profits to pay indigenous in this other one. You definitely have it more difficult on this other one. You will not easily agree to go and register in order to lose from the profits they are currently making. Because in terms of the act, at the moment, they are not paying anybody anything. And with the new act, they would be saying to them, no, register to the database, but you are then forced also to go and negotiate a benefit agreement with the indigenous owner of the state so that you must pay. So it is going to be difficult on that one. But one may perhaps be coming in. So that, but my view would be that we must understand that in the future we will definitely need a database. And this database cannot be, we cannot be able to say to people, look, this is it, if you want it, this is what you must do, or else you get nothing. It will be a more harsher way than an affirmative way of taking them along.
Somebody else had a hand up. Was it yourself, Honourable Panzamova?
I think most of what I wanted to say has been said, but I just think we need to emphasise here that you can't claim royalties from something that is not registered. I don't think you can. For something that is not registered. If I'm wrong, you must please correct me. But if I have a right to a well-known design, a design that everybody knows belongs to my community, and somebody develops a derivative, but they don't know who you are, they might think, well, maybe this comes from somewhere, but they don't know, and they're not interested in finding out who they can pay royalties to, unless they have a database from which to see the thing. So I can see that there would be no question of forcing communities to declare or register their designs or their trademarks. But at the same time, I do think that if they don't, there will be a great difficulty for them to accrue any benefit from the ownership of that land. In fact, if not a great difficulty, then an impossibility, because how will they accrue benefit if it's not known who they are that owns this thing?
Person on this point, Honourable Mabasa. Honourable Harris.
Honourable Mabasa's hand was up, but so was mine. If the Honourable Salah wants an incentive, I think the Honourable Fundamava just explained it. The incentive to registering is that if you register, you get the benefits. The Designs Act, in Section 2, reads, the provisions of this Act shall apply in respect of all registered designs. It works based on a register of which we are building a sub-register, which we call the database. That's how it works. I think to loosen the requirement that you need to register to get protection simply means that you won't be able to realize the benefits of your work. So my concern is that this is a bit of a storm in the teacup, and actually if we want to do what I think some members are suggesting, we actually need to totally rewrite the designs amendments that we have here, because they're all built around the central premise that your work must be registered. I don't think it's as simple as breaking a link in one line. I think the entire legislation is written in the spirit of the original Act, which is that designs must be registered.
Harry Fathers, myself, with the drafters and perhaps with DTI. Am I correct to understand from what we've been listening to for the last few days, it's not the ownership per se that's in dispute here. You know, it's there, it's yours. It's when the whole concept or principle of wanting to benefit from it, as it were, that the registration issue or recordal issue comes into play, not the issue of ownership per se. You may never want to benefit, you may never want to get this, it's fine. I just for my own benefit, wanted to just clarify that. Honourable Mabasa, and then we are closing the section now. We really have threshed it out.
So I want to follow on what Comrade Silau expressed. But I also want to add one element. The element that says it should be the government's task to accumulate data base all over the country to you know, in pursuance of these principles. Because if that doesn't happen, it will be very difficult for people to voluntarily apply to go into database. So that it needs to be a very vehement campaign. And even at that, it means there must be a certain length of period when it is assumed that information will not yet have reached people, because the practice of registering will be quite a very new custom to many communities that are a subject of discussion. Thanks, Comrade.
As I said, this was the last word from the members. DTI.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. I must say I'm just getting a bit more confused to speak about this thing. I just want to remind members that when we submitted this proposal to this committee, the issue of identification of ownership was discussed extensively. And I think then we then drew a distinction between the registration process, which is your normal process where you register the trademark, design, and so forth. Then the second aspect of it was the recorder. The recorder part of it was intended to make it easier for the communities to be recognized, so that when the registrar receives an application, they can do a quick search on the database, and if something is owned by a particular community, then the registrar can immediately refuse to register it without the agreement and so forth and all of that. That was the intention. The intention of the recorder was not to say that if you have not recorded it or if you have not registered it, the ownership then diminishes. The ownership stays. It belongs to that community. Now, we also agreed that even though you have not registered it, if it's hereditary work that we're talking about, then you still own it, and if somebody's going to be using it, they must come to you as a community. And we also indicated that this issue around not being able to identify your owner is not only unique to indigenous knowledge. It's already there under copyright. Right now, we don't have a register for copyright. We don't have that. We only have it for film. For all of those other things, books and so forth, we don't have a register. But then you are required to do a diligent search. And I think Advocate Albert just alluded to it when he said that you'll ask your lawyer to do a search, you know, a due diligence to actually identify. And as long as you've done a thorough search that satisfies your bona fides, that you did not steal and you did not intend, you've done your best to try and locate the owner and you could not find the owner. So I think we should not confuse these things, because, you know, it looks like right now, you know, we're confusing the registration process, and now it becomes like a prerequisite for a community to actually get benefits. It is not. It has never been. And Chair, I'm going to give you an example, and I spoke to Mongamedi about it last week to say that, you know, when matters of customary law, indigenous matters are discussed, we tend to make the laws that actually fit us, but not those people. If you take, for instance, the Customary Marriages Act, And the reality, you know, clicked to me on that one when my grandmother passed away. And when I looked at her death certificate was saying never married. She's been married before I was born, before my father was born. And when I went to the Customary Marriages Act, it's an act that seeks to recognize customary marriages. But for you to enjoy that recognition, you still have to go to Home Affairs and register it and get the witnesses in the same way that a civil union requires. So it actually does not recognize customary marriage. It actually wants the customary marriage to go and conform to the Western marriage. That's not recognition. So the consequence of that is that we actually would end up pretending to be giving protection that should be enjoyed when actually the enjoyment cannot be accessed. Because we want these people to actually come into the very same system. We want to convert them to be urbanized, to be, you know, to be doing written agreements, westernized. And I think for us, it will really go against the real purpose that we came here and proposed this thing. But I just wanted to say that. And I'm giving that example because that is something that actually I thought this cannot and should never happen when we're dealing with issues of indigenous communities, that we actually want them to comply and conform to the Western way of doing things, but we're saying we are recognizing their practices. And so that's the sentiment that I want to express again here, Che. But the other part that I wanted to talk to, Che, is the issue around government assisting. I think when we came to this committee, that's one thing that we spoke about. We spoke about the need to educate, but also the need to assist the communities to be in a position to access the benefits in here. I think the appropriate thing, Chair, for us to do is, as a department, once we've done with this process, that we come back to this committee with a proper plan of saying how we're going to roll out that. Maybe the suggestions that the members are making around the graduates that we can actually sort will be part and parcel of that plan, but we need to come with a plan. And we've already started that process, Chair. You'll recall that we indicated that we also are concluding an MOU with Contralesa to be in a position to also use their traditional days to actually reach the communities to be in a position to educate them. I want to pause there, Chair.
I think that that is more or less where we came from. But I think what is useful, DDG, in so many ways, with the drafters raising these issues, it became important for members to go on an exploration, as it were, of ideas and concepts. And sometimes when they're doing that, as you say, it can get confusing, and in fact we all were quite confused before we had a bit of a break. And then I think things began to fall into place and converge. And we are surely virtually there, but I think the point you made about just the customary marriages, for example, it does make that indication about where we are as a country and so on. I think Indigenous law members, and I speak to all of us here, including myself, it's really Indigenous community and the whole concept of that is so complex in some ways because we try to fit into a slightly different system. And that is probably why these international organizations like WIPO continue to grapple with it. They didn't grapple with other aspects of intellectual property. But this, they continue to grapple with. And they've got some of the best minds internationally that they are engaging with, etc. So I don't, certainly we've spent quite a bit of time on this. I don't think that we're too far removed from the point, but I think we do have to come back to the drafters, which is where we started off with, and to say, are there any other issues? Are there any other issues that you flagged? Because I've got a third issue here, but I may be the only one. Did you just want to come before the flagging, Honourable Kovasa? Yes.
Chair, I wanted to say that the DCG has taken us back to the original idea, and perhaps what needs to happen now is for the department and the drafters to sit and weave together what the DCG was saying and so that it becomes clear in this draft, so that we minimize this this difference, for want of a better way, which were necessary to come out so that we could clear our minds, so that we don't do exactly what she was saying, that we are saying we are legislating to benefit traditional communities, but we are looking at Western law principles to do what we want to do and defeat the very purpose of what we are trying to do.
Thank you very much, Harris. And then just concluding, we just make a little bit of a ruling on the proposal. Honourable Khadebe after Honourable Harris.
Chair, I just want to, I guess, disabuse us of a notion that there's any difference between registration and recording. It seems to be, every now and then, when you bring this up, someone says, oh, but there's a parallel process of recording. And if I'm wrong, I please would somebody clear it up with me. But I've searched the text, and recorder is only used, or recording is only used as a synonym for register. There's no, as far as I can see, there's no parallel or alternative process. So the question is whether you're on the database or not, whether you're there because you registered or you recorded. For the purpose of the text in front of us, they're the one and the same thing. And if I'm wrong on that, then I'd appreciate some legal guidance. But certainly we are talking about one thing here.
Get that one, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think for this answer, you need to go back and draw. At one stage, we had a database and a register. And there were a lot of issues about, is this duplication? Why do we have this extra database? And then DTI conceded to say this could form part of the current register as a sub-register. So I think that is more what the DDG was referring to say before you would have had your normal registration and you would have had a recorder. So in the Copyright Act, we only had a database and you could record, and in the designs and in the trademarks, we had a database where you could record and you had a register where you could register. In fairness, I can't really say that there would have been a difference in respect of what would have been done in the one and what could have been done in the other, because that is where the criticism came, that it was a duplication. So, but that is where that came from.
We then go, I think it was Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Comrade Chairperson. I think that the spirit is the DDG coming up with is correct. Is that we have a unique type of knowledge which must be protected in a unique way. But I feel that at the same time, we have this provision which was highlighted by Advocate Freedom. That one on page 90, that the provision of shall apply in respect of all registered traditional designs. I feel that as they are going to grapple with that, really this one will be in conflict with what the DTC is saying. I think that one must be resolved before we go anywhere. Thank you,
Chief. Yes, it is in black as well, so it hasn't, I don't suppose, it may have just been overlooked as we were all grappling with the Act itself. So, I'm not sure who from DTI has got the hand. Yes, Mr. Nyetsi Tenzi.
Sir, actually we wanted our drafter to be talking to the aspect you asked, you know.
Oh, that the fingers, yes. Advocate Striden.
Madam Chair, after what happened, after the previous time that I spoke, I'm reluctant to speak, but I will speak. I will simply, from the perspective of the drafting team, would like to place on record that the process has already started. We see the instruction, we see the policy being clear. We will do the necessary to not to make it a requirement
for registration in order to enjoy, and I hope I'm getting myself across a little bit better than the previous time around, that registration would not be a requirement for Indigenous communities to enjoy the protection provided for in this bill. As we sit here, sometimes to try and do drafting in a committee can be rather hazardous and maybe risky. I'm concluding by saying the following. For instance, we can't just look at page 90 of the bill, that's subsection 2, because this is a new insertion, but in the existing Designs Act, there's at the moment a current provision saying, it was referred to just a while ago, the provisions of this Act, and this is not part of the amendments, this is current law, shall apply in respect of all registered designs. So there is the same obstacle. We will need to amend this section in the Principal Act to be part of our amendment. But I would have liked to just to place that on record, and I would like to apologize for the confusion that was caused early on. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Just looking at some of the administrative things to do with principal acts, etc. Honourable Harris.
Chair, I Chair, can I just register that the DA believes that that's the wrong approach to take, that this is not the kind of fundamental change we should be making at the 11th hour where we don't have time to fully test and ventilate this idea. It's frankly a sui generis approach, which we could definitely have included in a sui generis law, but now we're attempting to provide a different type of protection for traditional designs as opposed to existing designs. The fact that we have to go back to the Principal Act to amend the very first section that defines the application of that Act shows how fundamental a change this is. We're deeply uncomfortable with it, and we would request that from our side we don't actually amend the current draft.
Can we take Honourable Albert?
Chair, yes. I'm faced with this perplexing problem. It's quite a problematic issue. Out of the blue, I was away for a while, but I think it's really sad that I'm only discussing this now. It's not that we don't want to entertain this. I'm thinking as a lawyer now. You know, how this would work practically. And I need to grapple with this thing a little bit. And so we need time to deal with this. And so I cannot make a pronouncement except to say that we support the amendments as they stand at the moment, subject to further investigation to how we can deal with this problem. Because I understand the point of view that you're making about people not having access to technology and offices and as urbanized people who have. So that is something that one needs to think about. But from a legal point of view, I'm just a bit cautious at this point in time. Thank you.
Actually, myself, because I have got a certain exigency here itself with respect to the Principal Act itself, I do just need a couple of minutes. So I'm going to adjourn for 2 minutes or so. I need to ask the committee secretary to go and clarify something, please.
Forward on whether we keep copyright or if that changes to a different word, to an Indigenous knowledge right or perhaps even Indigenous copyright. Just something to play with the wording there. We don't have a way forward there.
Note that, Ms. Hurling. Right, there's that particular one. Members, we haven't really gone forward because, as I said, it would have been unfair to the full membership. But what we have asked, is there anything else that advisors, legal advisors, state law advisor, our own parliamentary law advisor advocate, as well as Advocate Stridham, if they had. And the one issue has just been pointed out, because I didn't want to tackle something, you know, as important as how we left things. And that was the issue of copyright, or perhaps you can express it yourself, Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. As I was saying, that one of the issues that I still have outstanding, where we don't have a way forward yet, is whether we retain the term copyright or whether we change that term to something. And I have two proposals. The one is an Indigenous knowledge right, and another proposal is an Indigenous copyright. So on that, we still need a way forward.
Remember when that came up, I'm not sure, perhaps it was one of the advisors who raised it, was it, who raised the issue? Honourable Harris, you raised it, did you? Fine. So I think at this stage, make a proposal.
Before I make a proposal, can I ask a question? What happened to the previous issue that we broke on?
Just said, in deference to all of you, I chose not to tackle it until you came back. And that the only thing we have tackled is me sitting down and opening the meeting. And the issue that you've just heard, that's all. Because I thought that the issue that we left on required a full house. So we're now just dealing on this, and we will come back to the other issue immediately afterwards. That's where we are.
Thank you for the clarity. The issue of copyright is simply that, in terms of the technical requirements of copyright, namely originality and limited term of protection, the type of protection that we're giving to traditional works is equivalent but not the same. Therefore, we should have a name that is equivalent but not the same, or risk sowing seeds of confusion. Because it isn't actually copyright. It's a right which has remuneration rights built in, it has moral rights built in, but it isn't copyright in the strict sense, so we should rebrand it.
I like that term, rebrand. I think what was proposed, and perhaps it was just as we were walking in, were three options then. I think the one was the Indigenous knowledge right, or maybe it was two. The other one was Indigenous copyright. Copyright. it was two, was it, not three? Just want to confirm that. Two. All right. That is what was proposed right now. Yes, Honourable Khudebe?
Honourable Chairperson, I think that if we are going to say Indigenous copyright, we'll have to define that, what it is. We'll definitely have to define that, because it is a new animal altogether. I don't know anywhere in the world that thing has ever been used. That's where I have a problem with. Whereas the copyright is there, Chairperson, when the, I can make an example. All right. What I have resorted to, as you said that earlier, is that part of the thing to mainstream this IK to the ordinary IP. The issue of copyright, I think it must remain like that. Simply because rather than, if you are going to have a problem with that, it rather be the Indigenous knowledge copyright. Because then you know that you are dealing with Indigenous knowledge, but the copyright thereof. So I'm like saying Indigenous copyright. That one is going to confuse further. Yeah, rather say Indigenous knowledge copyright. Rather than say Indigenous knowledge right, but that one will not be correct. You rather put IKC before copyright, then I think that one will explain better what we're dealing with. I don't know what's happening today.
I see Mr. Nyeti turns his hand up there.
No, thanks. Advocate Shamin and myself in the morning when we were talking about the issue of derivative copyright, we said in practice that confusion, we don't think it will come whether we're dealing with indigenous copyright or the conventional copyright. And then we are here coming to amend the existing intellectual property. We should not shun away. We are here to amend that. In so much that, therefore, when we read things, they must be in context. So, therefore, our proposal is that we leave it as it is copyright, because we are here to amend this issue of saying we should not tamper with the principal act. I don't know why we are talking like that, because we came here to say we want to amend the existing system that has been used.
No, let's not go down that street. It just stick with us indigenous, because we had indigenous knowledge right, indigenous copyright, and a proposal now from Honorable Kadebe, indigenous knowledge copyright. You know, which is the knowledge is being put in. And we just deal with that issue first, please. Yeah. Sir Vandermeer.
Apologies, Chair. From a drafting point of view, like I said, I don't see any problem with retaining. I don't see a problem with making it the indigenous knowledge copyright. In fact, I would actually be more leaning towards the indigenous knowledge copyright. That to me feels like a better word than indigenous knowledge right, for instance. Definitely.
Do you wish to comment just in that respect, Mr. Nyatsi Tenzi?
Thanks. The original submission stands, and I propose that we leave it as it is. Thanks.
Clear. The proposal is to leave it as?
Copyright.
Indigenous copyright.
Yes.
But copyright only.
Yes.
All right. Can you just give the motivation for that? I just want to get that fully now, Mr. Nyatsi Tenzi.
we are saying the issue of copyright, we know that in the main, if copyright as we know it, has got a component of traditional knowledge, then it will naturally go to the issues of derivatives as we describe it. In so much that, therefore, if we're talking about this issue of optional recording of literary artifacts, all those things we describe, then it won't be difficult to say, then now we see a contemporary music that is based on traditional knowledge. We see a derivative that is based on whatever we describe as we change to folklore, all those things. So in our view, therefore, copyright should remain, but we should not be understood as if those issues that people are deriving from need a registration. Thanks.
I think the motivation there being put forward is very clear. Just final comment on it. So it seems as if DTI want to retain simply copyright. I hope I'm clear there. And then we've had the drafters putting forward certain other points. Honourable Khadebe.
Honourable Chair, I think that the copyright must stand as they presented here in the morning. That even the IK, a lot of us can be derived from that. Yeah. So even what WIPO is still also acknowledges that. So let's remain it as copyright, because we just will be perfectly mainstreaming it if we do that thing.
Thank you. That's the point from Honourable Khadebe. Honourable Harris.
I'm not sure how I can
say anything more except that copyright technically requires things which we are not complying with here, and we are totally fine with that. But it isn't copyright. So the fact that the work is original or needs to be original, the fact that the term of protection needs to be limited, the fact that the work needs to be in a tangible form, which is another issue we may bring up at some stage, but the protection we're offering here just simply is not copyright in the technical term. So it doesn't mean it's any less just because we don't call it copyright. It's just inaccurate to call it copyright. We should. I don't mind what the other name is. I think both of the suggestions on the table, and even actually Honorable Hadera's third suggestion is a good one. Simply that it's just technically not correct. So my proposal, I guess you could call it a counter proposal now, remains.
Looking, I asked for this to be put up. Meanwhile, I'm just looking, copyright, adaptation, and derivative works. I just remembered one aspect here, and perhaps it may be taking it out of context. It seemed to indicate derivative works may themselves qualify for copyright protection if sufficiently original, etc. And then it goes on. While a copyright holder's exclusive rights normally include, I just can't read below that, normally include a right to authorize or prevent the adaptation of the protected work. However, in general, this does not prevent creators from being inspired by other works or from borrowing from them. Copyright supports the idea that new artists build upon the works of others, and it rewards improvisation. In other words, borrowing from and inspiration are permitted, and adaptation and copying are not. Distinguishing between them is not always easy. I'm trying to, just recall some of the copyright aspects here and really wanting for my own benefit to check whether it had any relevance to the particular matter on the table. Honorable Salah?
Chairperson, on a lighter note, even if I have a Code 14 driver's license, I can still go into my sedan and drive it properly.
But I take the point. I take the point. I think that what you're saying is the Code 14 is a heavy-duty truck or something. Okay. No, I didn't quite see the relevance, but... look, I'm going to take a final word from the drafters on the issue. You've heard what's here. The one view is, I think, not to use the word copyright at all. If I'm not reflecting your position, please indicate this. But that is the one position as I understand it. The other position is really to retain copyright, but possibly with the addition of indigenous IK as well. So the last word from the drafters on this before we close this matter.
Thank you, Jane. I think from the drafters' side, we would like to say we are waiting for the last word from the committee.
It'll be our decision. There's no drafting challenge here. That's really what I'm saying. No legal challenge here per se. Honorable
Khadebe. I think we draw that proposal of indigenous knowledge copyright. So the only one which is on the table now is copyright. Because Mr. Harris didn't put any alternatives, so I think that copyright is the one that's on the table.
Okay. So as I understand it, Honorable Harris did not want copyright here. Am I correct?
Yeah, Chair, I propose I'm agnostic between Honorable Hadebe's now withdrawn proposal of indigenous knowledge copyright, and the two proposals from the advocate, Indigenous Knowledge Rights and Indigenous Copyright. I propose one of those three or another substitutes for copyright, which is just technically incorrect. Notwithstanding the fact that the protections are equal and the amendment happens in the Copyright Act.
I threw it over to the drafters, the advocates, the legal people. Because you see, the point that has been made here by those members who wish to remove the word copyright is that it will fail the technical test, the technical legal test. That is the position. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I can't say this. That is why I put it to you. Can you tell me whether by retaining copyright, this law that we are trying to put forward, this bill, this amendment, by retaining it, we will fail the legal technical test? That's really what I'm asking you.
Apologies, Indigenous. It's not an easy question to answer. If you look at what you currently have up on the screen, it talks to certain things. It talks to originality. It talks to certain things that are associated globally with the word copyright. So in its general sense, and almost as it will be generally known internationally, there would be certain things attached to it. But then, as I've also explained before, we are creating new law, and we have decided to do so within the Copyright Act. And therefore, the term copyright perhaps need to stretch. So that is definitely an issue there. On the other side as well, and that's why I'm saying we need a committee to take that decision. It will not be wrong to say Indigenous knowledge copyright. Neither of those, in my opinion, would be wrong.
Technical. So then we come back to simply the members taking that decision. Thank you. All right. Honourable Albert, was that a yes? You wanted to speak there?
I haven't been part of this particular debate, but I think if we look again at the nature of the unique rights that we're creating, and that there's a possibility, and I'm not sure if we're going to put that in a preamble, but that there might be a later bill that would be overarching and putting it all together, it would make sense from that point of view to call it Indigenous Knowledge Right, because that is what it's going to be in future in any case when there's a meter bill that deals with these type of rights. Because it is not strictly speaking copyright as it is known worldwide and accepted by international treaty and as applied worldwide. But it does take the Copyright Act and the rights therein and make use of it in a unique way. And therefore, it is probably better to say then Indigenous Knowledge Right, because then you actually separate it by saying that it does use the rights contained in the Act, but it's still a separate species or animal in the end of the day.
You are also agreeing that the word copyright be removed per se. All right. Honourable Kobasa.
No, I'm struggling to understand why do we want to look for something that takes us away from copyright? Why do we want to do that? Because if we are saying Indigenous knowledge is protectable under copyright as it exists, and why are we looking for other things and run away from that? That's the first thing. But the second problem I have, what happens if we all sit here, and this is hypothetical, we all sit here, we agree, let's shift away from copyright as we have it currently. And we do that, and some other lawyer comes up and says, but you know, you have technically removed Indigenous knowledge from copyright, and therefore it doesn't apply here. So let's not get ourselves into a situation which has a potential of being challenged to be not correct, legally not correct.
Now I'm going to actually just move on this myself then as chair. Page 30, I think this is where this is all coming up. Am I right? Page 30 and 31. It's chapter 2A, copyright in traditional works. Is that where we are? The application to traditional works. We pulled out the WIPO doc at that point, I noticed, and the actual subheading refers to traditional works eligible for copyright. And then it indicates the work that we have done here for a long time in this particular area, which we have at length discussed and deliberated upon, this particular area, simply judging from all the points I've made here. 28B. I hope I'm correct as I understand it there. And really, at this point, we had that traditional works eligible for copyright. That was, in fact, the subhead at the time of the experts being here as well. If I look at the colour, it's not a new colour. There was no objection by the experts at all in this respect. None. There never has been one. And they've been studying this for some time now. So I think that we'll leave that to go to a vote now at the end, and it'll be up to members to take a decision on it. We want to now go back to the point, the clause, where we had a short adjournment on, please. If you can direct us back to that, Advocate van der Merwe. House is adjourned now, yes, well, not the committee. If you can take us back just to the page for my benefit, and then I will take Honourable Harris's quick.
If we could go back to the page we were on.
28B was the point, is the 31.
Gotcha. I mean, this is the perfect example of what I'm talking about. If you look at 28B sub clause 2, it requires a far, I'm just comparing this to the existing 2.2 in the Act.
The heading is traditional works eligible, those eligible for copyright.
Mm.
And it then tackles that whole point very clearly here. So really, I think that we have been through this. We've been over it many, many times in the regard. And we've been over it with the experts as well. That's the point I'm making. So I do want to move now, please, Honourable Hadebe. I really would like us to move. What page were we on, Advocate van der Merwe?
Page 90.
90. Right. It was at this point, the application to traditional designs, 53A2. All right? Now, which one of the experts want to lead us on this? Do you want to begin, Advocate Stradom?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have indeed discussed. Allow me to refer to that section 2 currently in the Designs Act. Provisions of this Act shall apply in respect of all registered designs. Let us concede immediately. If our recommendation would have been that the word registered here, as it relates to existing designs registered in terms of this Act, should be omitted from the principal text, then it would be ill-advised. That is not what we're saying. What we are saying, what would be perfectly conceivable for the Honourable Committee to do, say that in view of the policy stance that was taken in here, that in respect of indigenous designs, in order to enjoy the necessary protection, in that case, registration should not be a requirement. And if we would then indeed, or the Honourable Committee would go about and bring about an amendment to Section 2 of the current Designs Act, that would be purely consequential to the policy decision that was taken in here in respect of removing the requirement of registration in respect of traditional designs. But after having had our discussion, we will even refrain from making that recommendation to the committee, as we would prefer not to go into the debate as to whether any amendments to Section 2 at this point in time might be beyond the scope and ambit of the bill that is before the committee, even though we would humbly make a strong recommendation that if the committee would have adopted that route, it would have been perfectly permissible within the rules of Parliament. But we will not even make that recommendation. Our recommendation is that instead of going into any amendment into the Principal Act, there it is. It's that red portion. I've got the wrong glasses here for that, but it says the provisions of Section 2.1, which is this one that I've just referred to, shall not apply in respect of traditional design. That is our proposal, Madam Chair.
But I hope this is clear. The original proposal had been the amendment, the consequential, and I emphasise consequential, which is allowed, as I've since learned, having taken a short adjournment. It is. It's perfectly acceptable. But the DTI advocate Stridham has now put forward a slight alternate, which does not require us to even go down that street at all. But I must emphasise that I've since learned that that would have been quite in order as a consequential amendment, which we did do under companies as well, and which we've done under many others. Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe to add on to what Joanna said, and I will ask the guidance from the committee on that, we have done some changes in red that are currently showing on the screen. And I don't know if perhaps the committee would like me to take you through those so that you can see where those changes would be and whether that would make sense. Can we perhaps start in trademarks? I've got it bookmarked, Margaret, so you can go Control G and bookmark trademarks. Go to? Bookmark? Trademark. Okay. If you go down from there, you can page down to about 50, to page 50. It will not necessarily correspond with your document. This is a cleaned up document already. Page 54. Excellent. So this is the first. Remember, this is our trademark, and in this one, I don't think there's any problem from any party. I hope I might be misrepresenting people, but as I understood from the comments made, because we have well known trademarks, means that there is currently a practice unregistered trademarks that enjoy protection. So what we have here is that we say the applicant for registration and the proprietor instead of registered proprietor. In other words, providing for both. If we go down
your document will not accord. Oh, let's see. That is clause 43D, subsection 5. I'll try and see if I can get those two together. On that subsection, it reads, the applicant for registration and the proprietor shall be A, where the originator of the traditional term or expression or geographical indication cannot be determined, or 2, the originator of the traditional term or expression or the geographical indicator is an indigenous community which is no longer in existence, or where, and then 3, deals with it cannot be shared. So it is simply that at this point in time, instead of having it as a registered proprietor, that has been taken out.
When the advocate introduced that, she said she assumes that everybody's on board. I am not quite on board yet. I need to be put at ease because my colleague, Advocate Albert, pointed out the we could perhaps sort this out under well-known marks. Now, I went and looked at well-known marks, and I don't know this law well, so I need advice here. Section 35 of the Trademarks Act is the well-known marks clause, but it's written in such a way. To my eyes, it looks as if it applies to international marks and their kind of automatic protection in South Africa. My question is, in the application of well-known marks in this section, do the courts interpret this as applying equally to domestic well-known marks? And if that's the case, then I rest and I'll agree with the advocates on her assumption that we're all on board. But certainly when I read it, it seems to be focused on international trademarks rather than domestic ones.
Harris, let's turn that over to Advocate van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. What it refers to here is that the Paris Convention is the convention that brought well-known marks to the fore. So if you read subsection 1A, or you've got in the Principal Act, 35, section 1A, saying, in determining, or for the purpose of Section 1, whether a trademark is well-known in the Republic. So it doesn't indicate whether it's an internationally used trademark or whether it is used elsewhere. And in Subsection 1, it indicates also that marks that it applies to, whether or not the persons that it describes carries on business or has any goodwill in the Republic. So in other words, if there's a mark being used in the Republic, that will also add to that protection. Furthermore, remember that in our catch-all section, our sections A, we say that the sections of the Act will be applicable to traditional design as there can be with applicable amendments. So I don't see that being a problem. And the principle of well-known marks is not just something, and I'll say that the Paris Convention is where it came to the fore, but that is where it was given international recognition. That is something that exists in the law of every country. So it is part of our common law as well.
that answer your question, Honourable Harris? All right. So it addresses that point. Can we then, you were on, in fact, we were on page 68, but we were all on the same point 5 there. All right. So now you are moving to Advocate Vandermeer.
Thank you, Chairperson. Section 43F, but I think what I'm going to do is this is, I'm going to use this as a last example and then just explain this is exactly what we've done throughout. 43F, because it's, I think there's about 10 or so changes. 43F, subsection 1 of 43F is on page 73 in your bundle. Just indicating, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection 34.1, the proprietor of a trademark rather than the registered proprietor. And then where we said registered in terms of section 43D, we've deleted that as well. So it will read, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection 34, subsection 1, the proprietor of a trademark in respect of a traditional term or expression shall not be entitled to interfere with or restrain a person referred to in section 35, which is actually the well-known mark, or a person who commenced using a mark in the course of trade. So that is the kind of change. But what we have kept is we've kept the register. So there won't be any, we won't fiddle with the register. And anything that refers to being able to register, that will be retained. The requirement to register will be retained. So it is only where there's a general use of the word registered before proprietor or before mark in the Trademarks Act that will be changed. If I can perhaps take you down to the Designs Act, Marco, that's on page 68, if you want to run down like that. In yours, I will take you to yours now. I first need to start with the definition of collecting society. On page 84, we have the definition of collecting society, which where we indicated manages matters related to rights in registered design. So that is simply taken up. Margaret, on that document, it's page 68. So again, just showing where it is a general use of the word registered. We've taken that out because that would then apply to registered as well as unregistered design. Then Johannes already spoken to 53A, where we will add that subsection 2. Margaret, that document is 74. And for members, it will not be in your document, but you can refer to page 90, where we will add that clause indicating that the provision of the Act overall that indicated only in respect of registered design shall not be applicable. And then, so subsection 3 there, you can see again the type of change that we will make. Where registered is used in a general general way. But, Margaret, if you page down, page 50, section 53B, you will see that will remain. Designs eligible for registration. So there will be no interference with that. And then we have done those kind of changes throughout the trademark and throughout the design.
Right. Thank you for taking us through those. Now, I think the point taken when we left off there, it would appear certainly to have addressed the issues that were challenging members of the committee at this point. I can see you're under a lot of pressure there with your neck as well now. Sorry, I hope it's all right. All right. Now, the final thing, without raising a hornet's nest, Advocate Vandermeer, there anything else that the draft has raised? Because I just want to look. I've seen the hand, Honorable Harris. I have seen it. I just want to check here. We dealt with all those deeming provisions, did we, that you at one stage had asked us to look at. So there isn't any. Oh, yes, there is one more flag on 98, on my page 98. Now, Honorable Harris, did you want to come in before the next flag?
So the problem with just moving on is that you create the impression that we're all on board, and certainly with regards to these two changes, we are certainly not. The point of the well-known clause in trademarks is that it provides protection for works that aren't in the register automatically. Therefore, it will function in the redraft in the same way. We don't need to specify that trademarks aren't registered. That registering them should be good practice, as they are with other trademarks, registering traditional trademarks. So therefore, we object to the proposed changes. In addition, the proposal to remove the requirement that the proponent. I don't have it in front of me. The proponent is that in trademarks, the proposal to remove the word registered throughout, thereby the requirement that a trademark must be registered, is unnecessary. If a trademark is well known anyway, such as in the Bele design, another well known trademark, it will be protected by the well known clause. We don't need to go as far as removing the reference to registered throughout. Therefore, we oppose the proposed changes. Okay. In addition, Section 33 of the underlying Act requires registration as a condition before an action for infringement. So if we want to keep on this approach, then we need to add another clause exempting us from Section 33. But I'm trying to reflect that if we go through the principal acts, we will continue to find these clauses that underline the importance of registration. And by us diluting the registration clauses, we're simply creating a whole lot of other contradictions with the underlying act. So with regards to trademark, we don't agree with the proposed changes. With regards to designs, I've expressed it already, I'll express it again, Chair. I don't understand why, if designs in the Principal Act require registration, we don't insist on the same for traditional work. And, I mean, the only question, the only uncertainty about the proposed amendments is whether they will even work. I mean, the way the Designs Act is structured is for you to get any protection, you have to prove that something is on the database. I think we've gone way too far, and we're actually, as I said, we're trying to build a sui generis solution into the Designs Act. If we wanted to do this, we should have done a sui generis solution for traditional knowledge in general. So we disagree with the proposed changes to the Designs Act.
I just want to illustrate the difficulty of always proving. There was one person that went to World War II, and he was promised that the government would replace his cattle. And when he came back, when he went to claim the cattle from the magistrate said, you must produce proof that you had 30 cattle. And he said, no, well, my neighbors know, my children know, my wife know. And they said, we want written proof. And very unfortunately, that person did not live long because
he had pride in knowing that although I'm suffering in the war, but although my cattle are reduced because of my absence, I will get education. But here I was just making a point. I took a long way, which normally happens in traditional communities. So that these are things that have happened before, and traditional communities have not changed dramatically. They are still what they have been for some years.
That was a refreshing anecdote. Honourable Albert, thank you, Honourable
Mabasa. I think Honourable Mabasa has indicated one of the problems in proving things, and I think we're grappling and trying to find a way around it that would not have unintended consequences, also legally. That's something that Mr. Honourable Mabasa has indicated might not be challenged in court in any of the left. Just on the Trademarks Act, I'd just like to expand on Honourable Harris's view, and that is, my thinking was that as well-known trademarks are protected, or well-known trademarks are protected, and it doesn't matter where they originate, whether it originates from the United States or within South Africa, I think it's a good view to say that traditional, well-known traditional trademarks would then also be automatically protected without registration. But in terms of common law, they would also have protection if they are not registered. So I don't think we need to take out the word register, because I think in the Trademarks Act, if you want the remedies in the Act itself, then you need to be able to show to the world what it is you're going to protect. So certain registration is necessary, and one can talk about how you deal with trademarks that need to be kept secret in terms of community practice. That there might be exceptions in that regard, or a certain way you deal with that. So my thinking is that in the Trademarks Act, there's already automatic protection in the common law, and also if you talk about a well-known. Because one of the practicalities is that if let's say I'm a... I might be a foreign investor, I might be a South African investor, but I want to put money into a project. I need to know what the rules are. I don't want to be surprised after the fact that there's a claim against my development. We must have certainty in that regard, and that's why the database would be there. The more problematic one is the Designs Act. And the reason why we went out together is not because of a conspiracy, but because we went to seek some outside advice from professionals, because we do not know everything. And the substance, or the essence of the Designs Act is that it has universal application. In other words, once you've registered a design, even though you might not be the true owner, or might not be that entitled, but once you've registered a design, nobody else can have a design that's similar or exactly like that. So it has universal exclusion across South Africa, and it can be also enforced worldwide. As opposed to the Copyright Act, where there can be instances where people have created very similar or even exactly same things that is protected by the Copyright Act and coexist. If you register the design, nobody else can have it. The problem is that, and Honourable Smaller has indicated the effect that people can sit, like they did with the start of the internet, when people just registered domain names like Coca-Cola.com, and you know, committed cyber squatting, or today is called cyber squatting. People can commit traditional design squatting, if you can call it that, by sitting there and looking at what designs have not been registered and going there, and that means all of these communities must then go and defend it. Therefore, if a community has registered it, then they will have complete protection against anybody else protecting it. as opposed to not having it registered and not thinking it's necessary to register it, and then somebody else goes and registers it in competition with them. The Copyright Act, actually, in terms of artistic work, also protects designs. So even though you cannot have protection of a design automatically at the moment, because you still have copyright protection in terms of the Copyright Act, which is not the same remedies exactly, but it's also effective remedies, because it's an Act of Parliament that provides it. And I think, therefore, the Designs Act should also not be changed. There must be a database. There must be a registered a registration process, so there's a database that you can show that you own this against the world, because it's an absolute right. It's not a relative right like copyright, but where two can coexist in the same space. Thank you.
Honourable Kobasa first. Let me take you off to Honourable Kobasa, Advocate Quetta.
Thank you, Chairperson. We must be careful not to write a piece of law whose end product or whose effect would be to punish those indigenous communities who might not have had the the benefit of Western education. Well, let me put it this way: who has not had the benefit of being lettered, but they had, and they continue to have, traditional methods of recording what they owe. Let me go back to the cattle Mabaso was talking about. You know, in traditional community, there never was a book that registers the names, because cattle are named, by the way. The names and the number and the color or colors of the cattle you have. But a man would have stones. Every time the cattle come back from grazing in the evening, a man would use a stone to count his cattle to make sure that they are all in. That was a register. Now, and it still happens, by the way, where people have not had the benefit of being lettered. Now, we must recognize that. Because if we are going to ask for books, in instances where we know there are no books, but there is a form of a record, and the general community knows, and the community can vouch without written books, and it's perfectly acknowledged and accepted. The chief, the Induna, knows all of those things. Now, exactly, you're right. When you approach a family to have their daughter hand in marriage, it would be known how much lobola you would afford, and on the basis of that affordability, you would be allowed to marry. and so on and so on. Now, if we want to strictly say that indigenous communities must register before they are recognized and before they benefit, we are literally saying we want to postpone that benefit until they are lettered. And it might not happen in their lifetime, some of them. The process of registration must be seen as a process in this regard, which does not seek to punish those, as I say, who have not had the benefit of being lettered, but they do have a method, a traditional method of proving what they have, what they know, what they owe. And that traditional method can be and should be used. So, the second thing is we must remember that we are trying to fuse conventional IP with traditional knowledge, indigenous knowledge. And in doing that, we cannot be one-sided and say, let's take traditional knowledge and plug it into conventional, indigenous knowledge and plug it into conventional IP in a one-way street kind of way. It's a two-way activity, and we must accept that. If we don't, we will get stuck here and debate until we are blue in our faces, and wake up tomorrow having disadvantaged the indigenous community.
I can see that many members are speaking really from the heart as well, the understanding. And we're not here to speak as lawyers as such. We're here to represent the people. We do, of course, have our legal advisors. Advocate Quetta, I know that you do want to contribute, but I just want to get the contributions from members first so that whatever you may add, then you're able to take account of all of that. So, just in this, before Advocate Quetta speaks, we'll have Honourable Kotsi and Honourable Albans.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I understand Honourable Harris's point earlier of saying, I think earlier he also said, we're not doing this to disadvantage people, but we're avoiding scrupulous people from benefiting. But I also want to say, if we, in terms of us trying, which is a fact, I think we should acknowledge that is a fact. But I just want to say, we also need to realize that it means for these indigenous people, and indigenous might mean they, as Babaza is putting it, have got no understanding of how to go about the registering, and that they might miss out on benefiting from this. Earlier I thought, you know, when the Land Restitution Act was applied in South Africa, how many people missed out on that? And this was exactly something that was affecting people in the rural areas. Others only later, when everything was closed off, even after all the work was done, I'm saying even after those graduates, unemployed graduates have gone there, they're still going to miss the people. And in the process, other people, they may not be benefiting. Perhaps what we need is to say, in this day, today, things are done in this way. But again, we need to realize that there are people who are still there, and we don't have to leave them at that level. We need to accommodate them because we want them to benefit here. And I think in that way, I thought, for me, if the DDG could again explain the issue of recording, I might have missed this. We say a lot of things here. Isn't there a way where we could find this? But even that should not stop people when this act is actually in action, that the people should not lose out on this. Because, people are only starting now. I even made an example about the special pension for that net. How many people miss out when this was given such a long time for people to come and apply? Others, only later, and then they realize this thing was closed and they have not benefited all this time. So my understanding is that it is not, by not registering, we're trying to say we still open up that. And does that mean if it has not been registered that it is not going to be checked out whether these people are genuine or not? You know, is that what it means, that I can go and say this belongs to me and there's no checking of it? I think if the issue of recording is the one that is going to assist us, can that be repeated so that we are on the same path? Because I think I'm a bit behind on that, so that we may look whether it assists us or not. Thank you, Shane.
All in the same vein, trying to look at the challenges and impediments that the people for whom this is intended to benefit and protect or whatever may be at risk. Honourable Elders?
Thank you, Chair. I want to say that I completely agree with Honourable Gobasa in what he's saying. My concerns arise from legalities and not from principle, policy, or ideology. And because of the uniqueness of what we're dealing with, we're actually now seeing the results of not going a sui generis route in the first place, and taking from lessons learned in the IP bubble but putting it in a different place. Because of the uniqueness, we might see unintended consequences down the line because of the mixture of the two. In a way that is unfolding today, where we have very short time to deal with this dramatic change that is being mooted. I just wanted to make that point. Thank you very much.
Harrison, then I do need to ask Advocate Quetta, who had his hand up 3 hands ago. Yes.
Tim, I have a very small point. If we're suspending the requirements in Section 2 of the Principal Act, that the provisions of the Act should apply in respect of all registered designs, that's all very well. But then my question is the benefits, the royalties and benefits that the Act provides, are we suggesting then that those contained in Section 53F would F? Are we suggesting that those benefits and royalties would accrue to a community that hadn't registered its design? I mean, what I accept is if we register the design in terms of even the amendment on the board, sure, there's a mechanism for royalties and benefits to accrue to that community. But the reason why I think it doesn't make sense simply to de-link Section 2.1 is because if you're not registered, then you're not going to be able to accrue any benefits or royalties. And if that isn't true, then I'd like someone to explain it to me, because to my mind that appears to be the critical point here. What is the point of protection unless you can benefit from it? Thank you.
Just one. Who says that the traditional methods of doing things are illegal? I'm not making a political statement. I was saying let's recognize that what conventional IP legalizes in the Western
sense, if you like. If not, if you look at traditional communities and traditional knowledge, does not suggest that traditional knowledge is illegal. What we must do is to make it legal here as we see it, and that's what we are trying to do. It has nothing to do with political statements. Because then we are saying, let's find ways of coming up with an act which continues to marginalize people of indigenous origin, who we are talking about here, by hiding behind legal technicality and suggesting that traditional methods of recording things are illegal.
You know what I want to do, honourable members? What I'd like to do at this point is to move across to Advocate Quetta, if I may, because he had his hand up earlier and I'm not just sure what it was on. Advocate Quetta?
Thank you very much, Shepherdson. First of all, Shepherdson, if this bill comes into operation and an indigenous community has indigenous knowledge that is not registered, it will be protected. The indigenous community will benefit because the bill, all these principal acts that are being amended here, they do state that if a person wants to use that indigenous knowledge, he or she must get consent from the indigenous community, approach the commission, and enter into a beneficiary agreement. So they will be protected. The next issue I want to touch upon is the issue that was raised by the Honorable the Harris, the issue of the fact that in the Trademarks Act, there is a section 33 there that requires registration before a person can institute an action for infringement. Now, Chair, that is in section 33 of the Principal Act. Now, if you know, Chair, on page 64 of the bill, where the Trademark Act is being amended, section 43A on page 64 of the bill. And this is a legal issue that you raise. Now, if we interpret and we read this subclause carefully, it seems that subject to the provisions of this, of part X 12A, the provisions of this act shall expect insofar as is otherwise provided in the said section, and insofar as it can be applied to traditional terms and expressions and geographical indications, which means that all the provisions of this act, the principal act, and also the BILV to be incorporated, all those provisions in the act, they will apply in respect of traditional terms and expressions and geographical indications, except the provided change that if those provisions in the principal act, they are not consistent with the existing provisions in the bill, then these existing provisions in the bill will prevail. What is that exception? But except in so far as otherwise provided in the third section, which means the requirement of registration will not apply because it will be superseded by this provision. Overshare, this is a safeguard. Even the new sub 2 that we have included, say, the second safeguard to ensure that there is no conflict. The provision of this bill will prevail and the registration will not be required. And the protection provided by other sections in the Principal Act will be enjoyed by the indigenous community. Thank you.
Point. I'm not sure just what you wanted, Honourable Harris. Just
clarity. I'm afraid I don't follow. I don't understand which part of 43A suspends the application of 33. If you could please go through it again.
Now,
Surya Chairperson, the problem that was except insofar as is otherwise provided in the said section. If you read it, it says, such as the provisions of Part 12A, the provisions of this Act shall, except insofar as is otherwise provided in the said section, and insofar as they can be applied, apply to traditional terms and expressions and to geographical indications. So the suppression part, the traditional part is limited, except insofar as is otherwise provided for in the said section. That is the part that is superseding all the other provisions of the Principal Act. Insofar as they could conflict with the provisions of the bill.
Then which said section suspends the application of Section 33? The Section 43 and page 64 says that this applies unless it is otherwise provided in a said section. And I'm asking which said section suspends Section 33 of the Principal Act.
Mr. Nancy Tenzi, do you want to just complete your response and then we take Mr. Nancy Tenzi?
This is not a section that is suspending the operation of Section 33. And my argument is a general argument, not only focused on Section 33. And the words that are present in my argument are the words that are contained in 43A1 that says, except insofar as the other words provided in the section. If you read it all, it says that the provision of this Act, when we say we are saying this Act, we are referring to the Principal Act. That is the words that are suspending, or maybe, I don't know how we can put it, that prevail, that ensures that the provisions of this bill will prevail over the existing provisions of the Principal Act.
Advocate Kreta, Mr. Nessie Kenzie, did you want to come in here before Advocate Van der Merwe? DDG had her hand up as well. Listen to you.
Okay, Chair, I wasn't sure if I should speak to the issue around the recording, but I can
just let get through this issue. Advocate Van der Merwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. Maybe just to add on what Advocate Kreta is saying, you have 43A saying that if there is otherwise provided, then that excludes the current Act. Now, in 43D, on page 67, we provide for a possible registration. It is making it applicable, so we will deal there with how it should be registered. And if we then remove that certain portions, I'm not sure if there is anything in here. I'm seeing under correction. But if there is specifying that it is a requirement, that will be removed. So that section will deal with that it is only a possibility that you may register if you want to. And then Section 43F on page 73 deals with infringement. So you have the bill dealing with the subject matter of Section 33. So if Section 33 says something different from what we have here, then it won't apply to traditional design. I hope that might make it a bit clearer for you.
Getting round just a bit in a circle, and it could be we're just not just if you could just hold your hand for a minute, Honourable Harris, because you know I'm just listening to what we have been receiving here over and over on these matters and some of the points being raised. Now the purpose here is to try and go forward. Now, I need members to be much more specific in what they're having a challenge with. Much more. I mean, because then we need to hear from the advocates and then we need to start the next process. So I need specificity right now and not points being repeated that we have already tackled. All right? So, Honourable Harris, your final point just in this area while we get the advocates to respond. So your point made, please.
Yeah, I mean, if we amend Section 43D to state specifically that registration is not required, then I guess we would also have to state that you do not have to have a registration in order to institute any proceedings under Section 34, because we need to our amendments need to specifically contradict Section 33 of the Underlying Act. And if they do, then I agree with Advocate Quetta that we've disempowered the Underlying Act. But that doesn't mean I agree with it.
I want to just want to check, Advocate, before you respond, any one of you. I want to check with DTI. DTI. Originally, you came here with the amendment bill, which required registration, databases, etc. Am I correct in understanding that? If I am correct, and hearing what has been, we are deliberating on now, I do want to comment from you as well. DDG or the Chief Director, before I come back to the advocates and then begin the next process.
Thanks, Chair. In our initial deal, it is true that there were conflicting sections that talked about the issue of registration, like copyright to be deposited there, and then to say that it will be burdensome if performances are registered, which take place on a daily basis or whatever, whenever they are done. So during those debates, we clarified the issue of saying we don't need to register, actually, in the database. And then, because of that, the recorder was also put very clearly, that things may be recorded. And then as we progressed, when we did a proposal before the redrafting came into the picture, we also clarified that recorder and registration, recorder should not be compulsory. And then even that during the redrafting, we emphasize that it should not be, it should be optional, only to make it easy to record, to prove easy of proving ownership and the like. So the issue of registration went out of the picture altogether. So that is as far as I can explain here.
Now, just before we have a short break, I want a comment from the advocates, any one of them who wish to make a comment at this point. You want to risk your case at this point?
Madam Chair, I think Advocate Quetta has clearly indicated the principle, and it was elaborated on by Advocate Fanamara. But allow me to simply to relate that to the example that has been given by the Honourable Harris. And let us reflect solely on that subsection 1 of that specific provision. What it is, the requirement in the Designs Act is clearly that for the designs to be protected, they need to be registered. If we do go about, as we have in fact gone about, and amended the bill now so as to clearly reflect that in respect of traditional designs, registration will not be a requirement. Then there's a clear inconsistency between the requirement in the Designs Act and the requirement in the bill. And what sub 1 is saying is that kind of inconsistency arises, the amendments in the bill will simply prevail over the requirements in the Designs Act. I cannot take it beyond that, Madam Chair.
Certainly addressed a question mark in my head, the simplicity of that statement. I think we all understood what you mean there, right? And then the DPI, you said you wanted to comment on something, DDG, earlier when we were nowhere near there. Recordal something. Do you remember that? Kutsi, yeah. Do you want to just, Honourable Kutsi, do you want to... It's Kutsi, isn't it?
Yes.
Kutsi, I've got it right. Do you want to just, do you recall what was said? Fine. Okay, go ahead, DDG.
Thank you, Jeff. I think the request was really just to explain the whole thing around the recorder on the database. What I indicated is that the whole intention was to minimize the process of proving ownership for the communities, for the indigenous communities, so that they can actually, where they can or are willing to, they can record on the database, so that it serves also as a defensive, you know, way of protecting your knowledge against anybody that might want to use it without you necessarily going and registering it as a trademark, as a copyright, as a design. So you put it in the database so that if somebody else comes to the registrar to want to register something based on that, they can pick it up from there, that is derived from that. Then then the person would have to approach you to enter into that beneficiary. That is really the intention around the recorder, to just bridge that gap and make it easy to prove. Instead of starting from the scratch of where you have not recorded it, then you need to go and establish your right first and show ownership and all of that. But it's easier if once you've done it on the database. And so I think if you look at that, and you look at it in relation to the concerns that were raised around identification of these communities, this was also going to serve as a way of quickly, yes. So it was going to serve as a way of easily allowing the people that want to use that knowledge to identify which community owns that through a database so that they can immediately do that. So what we said is that it will be very important to obviously encourage the communities to register. And what we then said is that there would be different levels of confidentiality in that database, so that the communities are not compelled to disclose everything for everybody to know if they just want to deposit it and for recording purposes. So the last thing that I also just wanted to say in regards to this issue around registration as well is that the issue of legalities around proving things is not a unique thing in law. Today we've got an agreement can be either oral or in writing. The fact that it's not in writing does not preclude a person that thinks they've got an agreement with you from actually taking up an issue against you and proving that, and if they've got witnesses and all of that. So this is not new. Similarly, if you look at the law of partnership, all you need is an agreement to form a partnership and say we are now operating. But that agreement does not have to be in writing. You will make it in writing to make it easy for you to prove because there's a record. So that's all I just wanted to say around the issue of registration and the court.
I think the time has come. The levity on my left has reached a point where it indicates that this is a suitable time for a brief adjournment. To just refresh, and I don't know if there is tea here or anything, but I certainly need a cup of tea. Are there cakes? Right. Members, maybe, I know that some members may want to do mini caucuses to but maybe we can stay pretty much in the vicinity.
The fact of the matter is, oh God. We say, you know, some of them, even on public accounts, I believe in Argentina, they have a system there where the public account system, what we call SCOPA, I suppose, runs as a proper court. The chairperson there is invested I think that's why McDonald must have thought I was a judge, with judicial rights, etc. But that's in Argentina, it's not in South Africa, and besides, it's trade and industry. But I did consult colleagues, many of them anyway, including our drafters and the department, that, you know, one thing that worries me is when I get the impression, rightly or wrongly, the perception that the drafters are really exhausted. That's the time when we run the risk of the integrity of the work we are all doing is compromised purely on a technicality. I'm not talking on political grounds. And we can't afford that. I think politically we are probably all very alert. I've never known a politician not to be alert politically. However, I believe we're at a point, not where I wanted to be at all, but we're at a point where we've made the certain, what could have been consequential changes, but we've made the changes in another manner that needs to be carried through. We need to consolidate all of that into a clean document, a clean document, because we really do need to go through to an adoption process. And I don't want to do that this evening if members are tired and not applying their full minds. So, DTI, I believe you are available tomorrow morning. The advocates, including our state advocate here, Advocate Quetta, you are available, I hope, tomorrow morning. And members who, all members had at one stage had caucuses scheduled, and for some reason they may have become aware that we are running into difficulties. So for some reason, I don't know why, I don't even know why the ANC caucus was cancelled yet. But the caucuses have been all postponed. With the... Oh, I see. Oh. All right. Well, there we are. They have already gone. So be that as it may, I haven't kept abreast of the larger issues within the House. I would like to propose that the meeting that we did schedule from originally 8:30 until, say, 10, is changed to 9 o'clock until 12. I'm looking at everyone as I say that. If members feel they would rather meet at 8:30, now's the time to say so. 9 o'clock. I'm also taking into account the exigencies that certain members have raised with me along the line with respect to timing. And can I ask all of us, including myself, to be on time? And can I ask, finally, the committee secretary to tell me where the venue is? I hope it's not here. V119. Please, can we all be there on time? Please. Can you bring all of your documents, including that principal act? Please. It's really an appeal. And Mr. Nyesi Tenzi, are you going to make available that sheet, or is it the committee secretary who's going to make available that WAPU one-pager?
Volume 1 and 2, and the UNESCO one. The 1 and 2, it is with the secretariat. The UNESCO one, we can again give it to you. No
problem.
But I've got something when I'm still on the floor.
Like to stay on the floor. Right, go ahead.
Yeah, Chair. I'm just talking to the bill on page 111. Yeah, page 111 on financial implications. We have given the issue of sustainability of the trust, but if you read under the financial implications, we never talked to the trust appropriation, that little loaning or kickstarting or whatever. Yes, I'm just saying, sorry, appropriation, yeah, somehow.
You did refer to it, and so I think that's acceptable. I just want to say on page 112, I did, through the secretary, consult this issue of the knot, which I could barely see was in blue. And I understand that when the minister tabled this document, the knot was in there, was there. So it was never a typo. Whoever made a typo, it wasn't when it was tabled. It was here originally. So that is the only comment I want to make in that particular respect. So on that note, lest you all walk out while I'm speaking, can I thank you for the time you have spent here? And I do hope that those of you who can will consult any expert you want to. And may I say that WIPO communicated with us late this afternoon, very, very late, to say they have been persuaded to try and put some comments together, and I will certainly hope it arrives tomorrow morning. All right? Thank you very much.